This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN and TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. It's all the same. It's a fun Friday. It's going to be absolutely gorgeous out.
Can't turn this song up loud enough, huh?
Should just play this.
Good Joe Walsh, life's been good. Can't beat this tune, man.
Reach back there into that six-pack and crack me one. Wait a minute. We'll take it easy. Jim Till, Troy Wester, Brandon Rewicki with you on a fun Friday, and it should be a fun one. After a big Blue Bombers home win against the Toronto Argos, we'll delve into that. We'll hear some audio, and we'll talk about Karen. Oh, Karen.
I don't think it's funny. I said it last night. There's nothing funny about this, man. Karen got up at 4:30 this morning to go to her job at A&W, and she got screwed by just an absolute crap call.
Did she really?
You mean, is that her job?
Yeah.
Yeah, we talked to her last night. 4:30 every morning.
Well, because I have a segment at 7:05 on the Royal Sports Power Hour for us to talk about the CFL officiating.
Atrocious.
And Karen.
It was atrocious. That call was atrocious.
The whole game was atrocious.
Yeah, fair.
It was absolutely awful.
It was borderline unwatchable.
Official-wise. Yeah. Official-wise.
And that's the thing. The game was wonderful.
Yeah.
The officiating was paralyzingly poor.
So what do you do?
I don't know what you do. I don't know. Outside of, you know, I suggested it last year of having command center in the ear of the head ref. So, for instance, a call like the bad call on Noel there on the illegal block on Miller, right away have someone talking to them right away saying, no, that's pick up the flag. You know, that's...
But see, to me, then get the guy who's at the command center on the field. And I know he's watching it and has the different angle, but...
Yeah, I don't know how you get them on the field. To me, all you need is the communication, like in the ear of the head ref, and they can walk them through sticky or tight... type situations that are holding the game back or where basically the crew ends up embarrassing themselves.
Yeah, and JT, you're right in the sense that that guy should be on the field, but unfortunately the state of officiating the CFL right now needs all the help they can get. They need two extra officials watching the game from a television set because clearly what they're seeing out there on the field right now is a different game than what 98% of the viewers at home are watching. And being at the game, borderline despicable.
But here, like, when I ride the NHL officials, it's because the NHL officials have a ton of money, or the NHL has a ton of money that they could use to improve the development, the training, everything that goes on with officials, even heading down to the American Hockey League, which they train their players and their coaches in. Doesn't make sense to me why they're not spending more money to train their officials there. The NFL has literally $7.8 billion in shared revenue last year. The CFL is, when I was covering CIS football, using CIS football officials, like there, it's not uncommon for a weekend for an official to do a Thursday or Wednesday night high school game, a Friday or Saturday CIS game, and a Sunday CFL game. So that's my concern is... the level of it needs to improve. How you do that is the big question to me. How do you improve these guys who obviously want to be good? But like we talk about the NFL not having full-time officials, the CFL, it's like a hobby.
Yeah, and I think that would go a long way, right? If it was a full-time job, quite possibly.
How do you do that? Like in the Canadian Football League.
I would suggest they could afford making it a full-time gig. I'm ignorant as to what the refs get paid. I would assume that they get paid fairly well as a part-time gig. You need to take something. It would pay for itself in an exponential manner in saving the integrity of the game to take some X percentage of the revenue coming in and dedicating it to your officials that are full-time and are able to completely dedicate themselves to training and all the rest of it coming into it. Even if you don't make them full-time, do something profoundly different to the training aspect of those who are coming into the league.
I was at the game, the home opener, and I was sitting adjacent to the rum hut, if you understand that section. And I'm saying that because it was right in the tunnel where the officials and everybody comes out. And you could clearly see there was an off-field official on the field guiding, like training some of the on-field officials. There's a guy in the end zone on a field goal, and he was yelling at him to step back 10 feet into the side, positioning him well. Like, they're working on it, but I don't know how you do it. It takes money. It takes money to train these guys, get these guys dedicated to have more time to put into this craft.
You can't cheap out on officiating, right? Yeah. I mean, those guys, those are the ones that keep the game safe. So you can't cheap out on that, man. That's absolutely imperative. That is money that's not something you can negotiate or anything like that. That's got to be a hard cost to protect and keep safe your league.
It's similar to a house, right? Like, you don't cheap out on the structure of it. Maybe the paint inside, maybe the flooring, some kind of the, you know, the finishing touches. But when it comes to the structural foundation, that's something you're okay with ponying up a couple extra bucks for. And that's basically what the CFL game is right now, because, sure, the hardcore fans are tuning out because of it. But maybe more importantly, the people that are kind of straddling the fence and maybe I'll go to the NFL more than the CFL. They're getting turned off by this.
And I'll tell you even more so maybe than the fans are the effect of those make their living from the game, like on the field. Like those are the ones first you have to – what transpires on the field, those are the ones the first people involved, and then the impact on the fans for sure. And the like, it turns into a bit of a gong show and a clown show, right? Like when you're seeing things that contradict other things, and even last night, some of those reviews, right, or sure looked like the out of bounds comes into play, but they don't have the right camera angles, nowhere near, and so that's almost makes it worse. The notion that you can review this, but our camera angle is so bad here, we can't verify which call is, we can't overturn anything because we can't see exactly where his foot even comes down. Like, there's nothing over top. It's just,
well, just the pass horrible. Interference calls are so inconsistent. What looks like pass interference on one call isn't. What is pass interference isn't called. Like, that one towards the end on the Argos DB there where they were driving and
had a guiding hand on his hip sort of thing, just a joke.
And that's the thing. And like I hate coming down on officials, but they are part of the game. If a player has a bad game, if a coach makes a bad decision, we talk about it. I'm all for it. If officials have poor games, we should be able to discuss this. We talk about you can't cheap out on it. I just don't know where you get the money. Like, it's not like the CFL. How many teams even make money? And now you're going to pool. What does it take? $50,000 each team to kick in and get these guys more trained, more aligned, make it a full-time job. If the National Football League can't make officiating a full-time job, I have no idea how the CFL does.
Well, it's not that the National Football League can't make it full-time. And I don't think you don't necessarily need to make it full-time in the CFL, but certainly things instituted during the training phase needs to be upped. That's the very least that needs to happen. And or you utilize technology and command center in a fashion that helps the guys on the field more so.
So we're going to discuss this at length, and we're also going to get into the discussion in the Royal Sports Power Hour, just what could be done for Karen on the CFL, what should be done for Karen, what about Karen from the Canadian Football League. We're also going to talk about the Jets signed two players yesterday. It's official with COP, Mr. Appleton. He was on the afternoon ride. Mayweather-McGregor, we're going to get into lots around the CFL, and the Blue Jays. They return to action tonight in Detroit, and of course an hour of your phone calls on the Boss Pizza Fan Line at 9 o'clock. But despite the officiating, or in spite of it, either way you look at it, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers came away with a 33-25 win last night. They improved to 2-1 on the season and head to BC this upcoming Friday, a week from tonight. Your thoughts on the games, gentlemen, the game on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
I was shocked at the turnaround in the second half for the Blue Bombers. For Ricky Ray to be sitting there with 243 yards at the end of the first half, it just had 500 passing yards written all over it. And it was really hard for me to imagine in the second half with the struggles and, you know, with Toronto settling for field goals and the line of scrimmage 27-27, 11-11 for the five field goals in that first half, just stalling in the red zone or just outside the red zone. Heaven forbid if they were to have broken into that red zone on a couple of those occasions. But it just seemed to me it was like what are the Bombers, how are they going to keep up? But then they come out, and the defense kicks into high gear. The offense kicks into high gear. The offense with a fantastic initial drive in the third quarter there to go up in this game and to never look back at that point in time. Both of those phases of the game came on in a huge way in the second half, and then ultimately to limit Ricky Ray to only 87 passing yards in the second half. And you come out of this game with a much vaunted defensive front of Toronto. It was just like, how much damage are they going to do? But Paul Laplace and Matt Nichols, and specifically Paul Laplace with the design of the play calls involved, helping to keep, and the O-line, a fantastic job by the O-line, zero sacks for that much highly regarded Toronto defensive front, zero sacks for them, the Bombers having two, and then, as importantly, zero turnovers for Winnipeg. Ball security was mandatory. It's what kind of killed them against Toronto, and they're able to come away with a clean sheet. It was what they accomplished in the second half I found to be borderline shocking and a fantastic step taken here by the Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
Yeah. I mean, the result was exactly what they needed. But similar to the way the Bombers shot themselves in the foot in that Calgary game, I think Toronto leaves last night's contest thinking, boy, did we ever leave a big W back in Winnipeg? Because the amount of draw balls that they had during that game was extraordinary. And not even kind of 50-50 type of balls, but just
touchdowns.
Ricky Ray putting them right where he needs to, and them just flat out dropping the football. So, I mean, the Bombers needed to win at home. They need to establish some kind of, not even dominance at this point, but just some kind of footing at home and have some kind of a positive record moving forward there. But I don't know. It wasn't the most encouraging win, I guess, moving forward, you could say, because I thought the Argos certainly let them off the hook a number of times in that game, but then again, maybe a bit of an outlier too, where the Bombers are usually real solid on special teams, and they got taken to task pretty good by the Argos return team.
There was a total of 416 return yards in that first half. It was an absolute like gong show from a special team standpoint in that first half. It was remarkable.
Yeah, the special teams was, and it's funny because they return the opening kickoff, Lankford does, and then they can't cover any kickoff.
And in that first quarter, return that opening kickoff, touchdown, then five plays, punt, two plays, punt, two plays, punt. That was their first quarter.
So when we went into this game, and we were talking about it all week long, we were worried about Ricky Ray, we were worried about the pass rush of the defense for the Argos, and guys like S.J. Green. And S.J. Green finished the game with five catches for 85 yards, no scores.
And you know how many receptions in the second half he had? Zero.
Could have had a couple touchdowns. And Mr. Whitaker had six carries for 19 yards. He dropped a pass in the end zone that should have been a touchdown. Ricky Ray, 330 yards, no touchdowns, two interceptions. The offense for the Bombers put up 33 points, while on special teams they got a touchdown as well. Matt Nichols was 20 of 36, 228 yards, no touchdowns. I did not see this playing out this way. I did not see S.J. Green and Ricky Ray without touchdowns. I didn't see Matt Nichols without touchdowns, but yet. So where do you credit this win to? The defense?
No, you cannot ignore what the offense did in the second half. This was a tale of two halves here. The Bombers were in a pile of trouble after that first half. All indications were that they were going to lose, and they were just fortunate as all hell. I thought that the Argos and Ricky Ray, who came into this game only converting 3 of 12 red zone opportunities, that they peed a couple down their legs here on the 11-yard line twice in the first half, having to settle for field goals. On the 27-yard line twice and having to settle field goals. They just couldn't get close enough or into the end zone, and so the game was close at halftime. And then I don't know what happened, but holy cow, did the bot, like defensively and offensively, in both cases, they come out and dominate on both sides of the ball in a huge way in that second half and look really sound. I just thought their second half was phenomenal because when you look at the numbers of Ricky Ray, you look at the numbers of S.J. Green, he had 5 receptions for 85 yards in the first half, and that's what he ends up with the game. Ricky Ray threw for 243. They had 254 yards in the first half, and 243 of them were in the air. And they came in with 91% of their offensive yards were passing yards. Well, 254 total yards, 243 being passing yards. They obliterated that 91% thing, and they looked like they were just going to continue to – they were moving the ball at will in the first half. And then that completely changed in the third quarter. And on top of it all, Matt Nichols, Andrew Harris, the O-line started to really assert themselves and dominate that second half. So that's why I think when Wicks is saying, hey, I can't take much from this win, I really disagree. That what the Bombers achieved – in the second half was remarkable, and I think the team took a huge step, a real important step in this game.
Yeah, well, hey, they got the win, but I just saw a lot of left plays out there for the Argos and a lot of things kind of working against them, right? I mean, you lose 4 points on the phantom penalty call, mm-hmm. and if they have any sort of sticky mitts on a couple of throws from Ricky Ray, you know, they're up by a fair amount late in the game. So, a positive result, but I don't know. Would have liked to be more encouraged for the team heading into BC.
Couldn't you say the same about the Bomber offense last week, though, against Calgary? Like, they, too, had opportunities that they left on the field, right and left. And I know it was 29.
In the first half, they did.
I know it was 29-10, but they finish a couple of those. They don't throw the pick, and they don't fumble the ball on the missed field goal. And those are, you never know. Like, it's such a game of momentum in my mind. Like, if you turn the ball over at the wrong time, it just shifts on a dime.
Right, and the Bombers lost that turnover battle, right? And, of course, and to win this one 3-0 in this game, to have a clean sheet from a turnover perspective, it was a critical part of the game. Those two things, offensively, they had to protect the ball, which they did not against Calgary, and there was huge concern about just how much trouble, how much could Paul Lapolis offset the push, we talked about this, of Toronto. We'd seen it last year with Hamilton, where he basically neutered all that pressure that they brought, and he, along with Matt Nichols, did a great job of rendering useless, more or less, the very scary defensive front of the Argos.
We'll take a break and hear from some of the Bombers players at the bottom of the hour. But up next, the Jets signed 2 players yesterday. 1 official, we reported on it. 1 new. We'll get into that on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Leave the back gate unlocked because TSN's coming over on select evenings throughout this summer. TSN 1290 will back up the truck with a portable party for up to 25 people. Catering by Qdoba Mexican Eats, including a burrito bowl hot bar with tortillas. Beverages, including a sampling of tall grass vodka from Winnipeg's only grain-to-bottle vodka produced by Capital K Distillery. A family pack of fireworks, courtesy of Archangel Fireworks. An iGrill 2 digital app connected thermometer for each grand prize winner, provided by Lux Barbecue Company, and a hot tub for you to soak in over the course of the week, provided by our friends at Oasis Leisure Center. We'll also have TSN 1290 crew on site to help serve and set up. Parties will happen Thursday evenings from now until August, including July 20th, August 10th. Enter online at tsn1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on The Big Show, TSN 1290, going to get back into that Bomber win, 33-25 over the Argos last night. But gentlemen, came out official yesterday by the Winnipeg Jets that they had signed forward Andrew Kopp, as we discussed yesterday, 2-year deal with an average annual value of $1 million, $900,000 the first year, $1.1 million the second. We all agreed that's a good deal and good to get Andrew Kopp back as a restricted free agent. Also yesterday, though, they agreed to terms with forward Maple Appleton on a 3-year entry-level contract with an average annual value of $758,000. Appleton, 21, led the Michigan State Spartans in goals, 12, had a 19 assists, and led them in points with 31 last season while playing in all 35 games. During his 2 seasons with the Spartans, he has 53 points, including 17 goals in 72 games. He was drafted in the 6th round, 168th overall.
Yeah, and hey, I don't know a damn thing about Mason Appleton. Nobody does except for the scouting department of the Winnipeg Jets. Talking about these signings, to me it's like talking about the signings of the Bombers when they're loading up for training camp. Not much to say about these cats, and they come in. Hopefully he pans out well, good size about him, and let's hope that he does well.
reading up and watching some video of this kid, it looks like, I mean, he's a six-round pick who's made the most of his opportunity, kept working since being drafted, but quick release and a solid two-way guy on film, it looks like, and that's what I read on the scouting reports of them. It seems like he's a Winnipeg Jets pick. Like, they love those guys who, you know, come in, work hard both ends of the rink, could put up some points, also be good defensively, nice hands, quick release.
Those are traits all teams like.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I'm not a Big Ten guy, so I haven't seen too many Spartans games. But good for the kid, right? Yeah. I don't know. There's not really a whole lot to say about Mason Appleton until we see him a little bit at training camp here. But at least a little bit more depth for the Moose, hopefully.
He brings some serious ginger game. That's for dang sure.
Ginger. Yeah. I don't know if I trust Mason Appleton yet. But
looks a little bit like Jacob Trouba. There's one picture of him here that looks a lot like Trouba, but handsome fella.
Yes, good for him.
Yeah.
Doing some research with Rick Ralph yesterday, we found out that his hometown in Wisconsin makes fire trucks. And it's one of the biggest party towns in the U.S.
That sounds like Rick Ralph type of information. Yeah.
He is the sixth of the Jets' eight selections from the 2015 draft to sign an entry-level contract, joining defenseman Sammy Niku and forwards Kyle Connor, Jansen Harkins, Jack Rossovic, and Michael Spacek. So Mason Appleton is a Winnipeg Jet with a three-year entry-level deal. Andrew Kopp is back, and we wait. The only RFA needing a contract left for the Jets from last season or under their restriction or guidance is Connor Hellebuck, who has filed for arbitration. So we wait and hear about that one as well. Back into the Bombers' victory over the Argos last night at Investors Group Field when we come back to the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
I'm ready. TSN 1290 and the Walt Morris Group of Companies, including Winnipeg Dodge, present the first ever TSN 1290 Golf for Kids Classic Tuesday, August 15th at Southwind Golf and Country Club. It's a Texas Scramble Best Ball Tournament with proceeds to benefit the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba and Kidsport Manitoba. Registration is $150 per person or $500 per foursome and includes all the amenities that come with an 18-hole golf tournament. Best ball, buffet-style food and drink before and after, freebies, chances to win cool prizes, card rental. There will also be planned events for select holes through the course hosted by many of our friends, including the Pint Winnipeg, Royal Sports, Santa Lucia Pizza, J&M Window and Door Company, Darcy Bain Physiotherapy, Windeck Limited, Ashley Furniture, Mr. Lube, FXR Adrenaline Unlimited, Viscount Gord Hotel, United Firefighters of Winnipeg, Local 867. Space is limited and available on a first-come, first-served basis. It is filling up, but there are some spots left. Visit TSN1290.ca to get in on that. Should be a good time on August 15th. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you back on the Big Show. It's 34 minutes past the hour, and it is going to be gorgeous out today and very, very hot. So start your weekend off in the right way. The Bombers started their weekend off in the right way with a 33-25 win. Yes, it is. Last night over the Toronto Argos, Matt Nichols just said on SportsCenter there, you know, this is one of those games that's good for us because you know how to win. It speaks about the second half. What does this do to sort of be in a battle like this and be able to pull it out, and especially for this team at home?
Yeah, I think this is the kind of win that fuses an already tight-knit group, just makes it that much more tight. And as we've talked about, the sort of how this team doesn't seem to struggle whatsoever with adversity. And I think this just further enhances what's already a tight group. These types of wins are a lot of fun, where things, you come in at the half and the defense is getting lit up. You're having trouble moving the ball, being effective. I can't remember. I think Matt Nichols was like 45% completion percentage at the half with a few yards. It was a struggle in the first half. And to get everything going and rolling to end up securing a victory like that, That goes a long way, man, in helping to build momentum for the season. And it was such a monumental win. We talked about you go out and you lose this game, and it's like, uh-oh, you dropped two in a row at home. Where's the season going? Heading into Vancouver next week. It's just it changes the entire landscape of the outlook of the season, really, in securing that win last night.
Yeah, it buys you a week, too, right? If you go into BC and drop 1-2-2, yeah. Not the end of the world, right?
Yep. Like, it's a different conversation.
Exactly, right? And the pressure and the stakes of the next game. It just makes things so much easier for the Blue Bombers, right? And you know, inside the locker room, there's really no such thing as style points for a win, right? Like, it's not like they, you know, we can kind of maybe pick over it with a fine-tooth comb a little more than they might in terms of, you know, how well they truly played in the sense. But for them and with how hard they fought and you know, to their credit, maybe more importantly, you know, showing some pretty solid fortitude late in the game. A couple, you know, Ricky Ray had two chances to try and tie the game for the Argos offense, and he couldn't get it done both times against the Bombers defense.
Yeah, and we were worried about that, and we were worried specifically about Carmichael. I'm trying to remember his name.
Rock Carmichael,
yeah. I don't know why I'm second-guessing
and
myself.
Didn't even hear his name hardly all. Now, he was the benefactor of one or two of those drops, but it wasn't like the week before where, you know, he has seven tackles and he's involved in a lot of sort of flyby sort of thing. He was able to step up. There's a number of the defensive players for the Bombers that had real super solid games. It was really impressive what they did in the second half.
And even with the drop balls, like, you're going to have to expect some production from Ricky Ray and guys like J.S. Green, and you're not going to totally shut those guys out.
S.J. Green,
thank you. I did think, though, that overall, like, the question marks I had from certain guys on the defense going in played well.
Hey, I mean, you're going to give up 300 to Ricky Ray probably, especially this year, right, where it's 90-10, their play calling. But, I mean, maybe we don't talk about this guy enough, but, you know, once again, we look at that trade the Bombers made last year.
TJ Heath
is a baller. Like he just every single week he's borderline becoming can't throw in his neighborhood because he's all over the ball every single throw. And another pick from him last day. He's an absolute ball hawk in the defense.
Taylor Loeffler had a great job sort of fortifying his reputation for creating alligator arms with receivers out there. Nine tackles, a number of them separating the ball or just causing quite a bit of trouble. That Sam Hurrell continues to surprise, I think, in a positive manner for how critical a lot of people were. Any of us Bomber fans, knowing Sam Hurrell was going in there, that was a decision of concern for anyone that watched a couple of years ago, and he played decently. Maurice Leggett played super well. TJ Heath, like you said, Chris Randall was an absolute stud out there. So just what they did after getting lit up like that, and like for 243 in the first half by Ricky Ray, and shut that down to 87 yards, that's a night and day type of a change. So the adjustments that they made from a coaching standpoint and how the players picked it up a little bit was super impressive.
I was at the game last night in the first half in the south end zone sitting in the seats, and that's what I was watching was Carmichael. I wanted to see how he did, and I was wondering if he could bounce back and sort of, after two games, getting his feet wet, play better. He did. Hurrell was the other guy. And Loeffler. Like, Loeffler live, his sideline-to-sideline speed and how he tracks the ball for a big man. And I knew he was fast, but to see it live was different. But, man, I was wondering what was going to happen at the end of the first half when TJ Heath's walking out of the end zone in front of us while the game's going on and limping. And I'm like, oh, man, if he goes down, they need him. And he comes back in the second half and plays extremely well. This is the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon were discussing the Bombers' 33-25 win last night over the Argos at IGF, improving the record to 2-1. After the game, head coach Mike O'Shea addressed the media with his thoughts.
It's a great thing to learn from. It's obviously easy to learn when you win, but you're right, that clock goes on forever. That's the beauty of the CFL. It's an awesome game in that way because the end of the game, so many things can happen and leads can change. But I thought our defense rose up and stopped him. And how about TJ Heath? You know, ending the game with a pick. He's a pretty special player.
Came in late. Did anyone ask
about me?
I came in late. Did anyone ask about just getting the win in front of the home crowd? Nope. What it means to kind of see those fans here and cheer you off?
It's important. They my headphones and my ears were ringing at one point in the fourth quarter. They were going crazy. You can just, that buzz comes right through the headset. So they were on tonight, the fans were, and it's important that they got to see such an exciting contest and us winning in the end.
Was there, Andrew talked about kind of this being a redeeming week, I guess, to a certain point. Was there a plan to kind of give him the ball more, or is it just fluid as you know, as you get more touches, he's going to get more touches?
Yeah, I think that's what it is if you stay on the field longer, he's going to get more action. You know, one thing, just because I want to say it, is, you know, Andrew's the type of guy that you want to get on his back, and you want to let him carry your team, right? He's a special back.
He's such a stud. Andrew Harris is just, he is the Canadian version of Beast Mode. There's just no doubt about it. He runs a lot like what you see from Marshawn Lynch, and there's always punishment at the end of his runs or receptions. Always falling forward, sort of everything you want your offensive players to emulate, just beam out of the pores, pour out of the pores here of Andrew Harris. What an impressive player, like from a football kind of a guy. He's just the very essence of the game.
Yeah, it's pretty rare to see running backs maybe outdo receivers when it comes to yak yards. And it's, you know, yards after contact instead of yards after catch. But how many of those 82 yards were yak yards,
yeah,
for Andrew Harris? Like a hell of a lot of
them. His yards after contact, or yards after catch and or yards, yeah, after contact. It's just remarkable.
I know it doesn't happen that often, but did Wally Buono and the BC Lions give up on a guy too soon? Usually when Wally moves on from a guy, that's usually it. Maybe half a season or that next season is all they have left in him, if anything. Did he give up a little bit too early on Andrew Harris?
Well, I don't think it was a given up on him, and I don't know how much he thought was out of the tank. I think a lot of it had to do with De Niro, yeah, with Andrew Harris, and specifically paying a Canadian running back, right? You're talking
a lot
way
of money.
More bread than when you have an American in their first or second year there. So, hey, I'm glad. For years, I was lamenting the fact that the whole territorial pick that the BC Lions made with Andrew Harris being out there and all the rest of it, it sucked ducks that he wasn't here far earlier than he got here. But it's great that he's here now. And you got to touch on Justin Medlock, the brilliance of Justin Medlock, 27 field goals in a row. For a while there in the first half, it was essentially a field goal shootout. I don't know if that's an official sort of thing in football, but they're just trading field goals back and forth here. And for him to go hit that bomb, the 56-yarder, and a lot of people started talking about the 61-yarder, right, in BC. If he hits a kick very similar to that, there's a chance there, and there's no tee out there. So it's just the absolute precision of Justin Medlock is ridiculous. He's so effortless for him. It's just massive respect for what that fella does.
55 yards and lots of left.
Yeah, it looked like he had about 7 yards left on that
one. And I'm telling you, they're taking that should have been considered a 56-yarder. He was definitely over the center line stripe. So, and he had a good 4 or 5 yards on it, sort of thing, right?
It's funny, you know, being at the stadium.
Outside.
It's funny being at the stadium and kind of the ambiance or the atmosphere when he goes up to kick. And
everyone takes it for granted it's going through.
Everyone, this is not even a joke. People leave their seats and start to go refresh themselves with another drink or an appy or whatever it is before he kicks.
As opposed to the praying that used to happen.
Well, it used to be the same thing, but they were just, we don't need to see this. We'll hear it once the miss happens. But with Medlock, it actually is comical. People don't even care because it's
wonderful.
It's basically automatic.
It's a luxury to put that much faith in a guy.
I heard they used to stay in their seats but not watch.
Yeah, I've heard plenty of what guys used to do.
I did, people used to do as well. I did, Troy.
Pray
have a guy,
sessions.
I did have a guy yell at me yesterday when the Argos return team was running rampant. Can you tell your partner to teach a guy how to tackle? The tackling of Mr. Medlock is...
He hasn't tried to tackle. He pushes everybody inside. Ultimately, a coach will be... You'll get out of film, right? The next day, film session, you'll get out okay as a kicker if you push the returner back in towards the field. And Medlock does that well. He doesn't ever try and tackle, it doesn't seem.
Medlock's kind of like... I think the same thing when you watch Patrick Laine defensively. Like, when he goes to block a shot... Like, dude, just let it go. Like, don't risk anything with Medlock.
Medlock, right?
Keep that left leg.
Get out of the
bubble
way.
Wrap. Just take a knee.
Yeah.
We'll worry about the points after.
Still, it was the whole. So you encourage him not to make contact?
Well, no, no.
I understand why. I fully understand why you don't want him.
His primary job as a safety and what he's doing there is to put – there should be help coming from inside. So as a kicker, if you push the guy back into the field, theoretically you should have help there. Now, his tackling – he's not getting paid for his tackling skills. And I really – for me, in evaluating a kicker or anything like that, I don't care what he does. As a tackling, is if he pushes the guy back inside and he's, you know, has the ridiculous precision that he does on field goals, I really couldn't care less about his tackling.
Thoughts from Mike O'Shea there on what he was saying about just, you know, obviously winning at home and the crowd and all that. He's been big since his tenure here about getting this crowd behind them.
Well, and every I mean, that's the advantage. That's one of the big advantages when you're at home is the crowd and the involvement, the excitement. And for the love of Pete, Mike O'Shea himself loves the CFL and understands the role that a home team can play. And these fans deserve a lot better than what they've had. Is it now 12-26 since IGF has opened up, right? This fan base deserves a lot more than simple home wins, right? When you're talking about how long it's been, the driest spell here for a Grey Cup, there's all kinds of things, really, that this fan base has coming to them and are owed. And certainly winning your fair share of home games is the first step in repaying their remarkable patience and dedication to this organization. And no one's more acutely aware of that than Mike O'Shea. And it's fantastic to be able to deliver an exciting game and ultimately a win.
Yeah, and last year was kind of the outlier, right? Where, to be a pretty consistent playoff team, you have to make your home place brutal to play in. The same way when the Bombers travel out to Calgary, right? Or any team travels out to Calgary for that matter. It's a graveyard. And that's what IGF needs to be for the Blue Bombers. So you're not going to go 7-2 every single year on the road. You can't bank on that, but you have to be able to bank on a similar kind of home mark,
like,
if you want to be in the playoffs.
Yeah, you don't want to be 4-5 at home and 7-2 on the road. Switch that around and everything's fine and dandy.
We are going to hear from Karen at the top of the next hour in the Royal Sports Power Hour. Rod Peterson, the voice of the Riders, is also going to join us, and we'll hear from Steve Phillips on the Blue Jays as they get back at it tonight in Detroit. But up next, more on the Gong Show that has become the Mayweather-McGregor. Venus Williams at 37, off to another final, and Tim Tebow is in the news. We'll get to that next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki, weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The TSN 1290 Summer Street Team is at Winnipeg's best events all summer long. We'll be at concerts, sporting events, charity fundraisers, and many more things, items, and events. We'll be bringing our Spin to Win prize wheel to give you a chance to win great stuff like Jets gear, Tim Hortons and McMunn and Yates gift cards, a Burton snowboard with bindings from Alter Ego Sports, weekend road trip getaways from Explore Egan, Minnesota, and much more. Here's where you can find us next. We'll be at MTS Super Spike July 21st and 22nd at Maple Grove Rugby Park. For more information on these great events and the TSN 1290 Summer Street Team, visit tsn1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon with you on The Big Show, Royal Sports Power Hour, and we'll hear from What About Karen at the top of the hour, see what, or if anything, could be done for her. Gentlemen, yesterday, Venus Williams, 37 years old, after a Wimbledon final at 37 years old.
She's I always enjoy listening to her talk. She's just seems a little bit more down to earth or easier to approach, expresses herself maybe a little bit better than her sister. And it was neat listening to her post match yesterday, just talking about how, you know, her sister not being there, how she misses her sister not being there, and she wishes actually that her sister could play for her in the final, sort of thing. So it's neat. It's a great story. And this whole age thing is we had Mike Hogan on yesterday talking about the ageless wonder of and the level of production from Ricky Ray, from Tom Brady, and then he also, you know, to mention Federer and what Venus Williams is doing, and you just wonder how all this stuff is happening with these older athletes. It's cool stuff.
You've totally ruined sports for me now, Troy. honestly, because you know, watching Feds and watching Venus, like I can't help but be a little skeptical. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Not that I'm accusing them of everything, but I mean,
how dare you?
It doesn't need to be illegal what they're doing in making use of or taking advantage of certain forms of science that might be out there and helping older bodies.
And it's not like they were, like both of these players, it's not like they've been dominant for years now. They were both done. Mm-hmm. Like Federer was done a few years ago, and people said, you know, like great career, but the injuries and everything, there's just, he doesn't have much left in the tank. And same with Venus. Venus wasn't even, I mean, she wasn't seeded for a long time, let alone being kind of a consistent contender. And they both looked like they're playing like they're 25 years old again.
Same thing with Tom Brady. It looks better than he did 10 years ago.
In the NHL, I mean, you're 30 years old and you're taken behind the woodshed. Put to pasture, right?
Like,
it's interesting how all these sports are, it's just interesting, like the different sort of gaps we see in performance when it comes to older athletes.
I understand what and how you guys are saying, and I get it, and I feel the same. Like, it's, I often wonder now, too. However, like, aren't athletes doing more than they've ever done? Like, if this is your job, and it's millions, like, why, I guess, dedicating your sport, yourself to this craft and new in ways and science and everything else, just working harder at it.
It's all a part of it. And your people in general are wonderfully naive, maybe even ignorant, if they don't understand the science involved in it all as well.
So she'll be in the final at 37 years old. Tim Tebow hit his first walk-off home run for Class A ball, and he just continues to just, as we talked about, live the dream. This is what I want to do. This is what I'm going to do. And he's in Class A ball now, still not with a great average, touching 300 or anything like that.
But. Well, sure, he's over 300.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's like 337 or something, 326
right now.
326?
Six or seven dingers for this club. He's doing pretty well.
Because he was 228 at before Class A ball.
For the promotion, right? Yeah.
I'm happy for him.
Absolutely.
A lot of people like to just...
People
they
hate.
Like to crap
just
on.
Like to hate. Yeah. But the dude's living his dream and just living life as he wants to. And anyone that has a problem like that, in my opinion, is an idiot.
And it's not like he's, you know, some kind of garbage dude, right?
Yeah.
Who's disrespectful and rude and like all that. So like he's a real genuinely nice person, at least on the surface. I mean, you never know with a lot of people and a lot of athletes, but he... I don't know.
By all accounts,
lot of people like to just cheer against Tim Tebow, I guess, because of the name. But I would love to see him in the majors this year. You know,
so
if it ever happens.
I didn't even grow up playing baseball, but that's what I'd be doing this summer if I could. If I had the wherewithal and I had the talent and, you know, some money in the bank.
Join a softball team.
Well, I'm trying to, but nobody wants me anymore. We're not supposed to talk softball on the show anymore. But if anybody's looking. Finally, we've got about a minute here, but this Mayweather-McGregor thing, the first one I was so excited for, and the second one in Toronto, I was like, wow, okay, and 71 beeps according to TSN, and that. Then yesterday in New York, I'm just like, okay, this has got to stop. And I've said this before, I'm not a big guy who likes arrogant athletes, pompous, brashness, but there's something about McGregor that I tune in and listen to what he says, even though it's over the top and gong show-ish. This has become an absolute gong show. And I think it needs to stop. It's going to England today, but it's actually, I know they're selling pay-per-views. In my mind, and people will debate whether this is an actual event or sporting event or what, it's just destroying it now. This has gone to a new level of low for me yesterday with what transpired in New York. They're just yelling at each other.
Well, the lewdness and the crudeness is way over the top, and it's a tragic reflection, I think, of the society we live in where these buttons and the words being used and the phrases and the insinuations and all the rest of it, you know, body parts being involved and blah, blah. This is the way you sell things in today's world here. And they're just letting loose at it. I've had it as well from that standpoint. I would much prefer just a little bit cleaner way to go about things. Having said that, and I'm like most everybody, they were entertained by the first one, even took that much more so to what happened in Toronto and then are kind of out after yesterday. But be prepared to be sucked back into this vacuum today because they're going to London, England. and it is going to be insanity there. I think it's at Wembley Stadium or something like that. Like, it's going to be a massive collection of people, super big-time pro Conor McGregor, and it'll probably be worth watching again today.
We got to take a break. We'll be back. We'll hear from What About Karen next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Congratulations to Miles O'Toole, TSN 1290 Subway Sports Star of the Week. Miles was nominated by Alana Morris, who told us that Miles is an amazingly hard worker. He plays hockey year-round and always puts in his best. During the school year, he studies really hard as a biosystems engineer student at the University of Manitoba. And in the summertime, he works full-time construction, which is a very laborious job, sometimes requiring him to work up to 12-hour shifts. In the evening, he plays men's hockey for multiple teams. And even though his days are usually strenuous, he always brings his game and plays wonderfully despite the fatigue. I assume he probably has. He is very uplifting and positive towards his teammates on the ice. And watching his games is always a pleasure. He's a wonderful athlete, and he loves his food. And he loves Subway, so please pick Miles. We just did. For those reasons, Miles is today's Subway Sports Star of the Week and receives a $50 gift card from Subway. Eat fresh. If you'd like to nominate someone to be our next Subway Sports Star of the Week, tell us about them now at tsn1290.ca. We'll announce another winner next Friday right here on The Big Show on TSN 1290.
Biosystems engineering student. That is absolutely awesome, man. Much respect.
Yeah,
kick
good
butt,
for
Miles.
You. And still time to play sports. And work construction in the off season, which is never easy. That's a hard job.
I had that job for a little bit. It was more deconstruction that I was doing, and it was that's a tough gig, man. Hard work.
Tough. Congratulations. You are a sports star, Subway Sports Star of the Week. Bombers beat the Argos last night, 33-25, and it happened. Karen Kuldis was had a chance to win $1 million if two kickoffs were returned for touchdowns. One was at the start of the game by Mr. Langford of the Bombers. And then, of course, another one was by the Argos. But a bad penalty call for an illegal block, which wasn't an illegal block in my mind at all, prevented her from winning $1 million. She joined SportsCenter last night with Jen Hedger and Darren Detition literally moments after the game ended with these thoughts. Here's Jen Hedger and Darren Detition from SportsCenter with What About Karen.
Now from Winnipeg, and Karen, a game you won't soon forget. I guess the good news is that you won a $25,000 home theater system. Yeah. The bad news is you thought you were going to be a millionaire tonight. What was it like for you when Martise Jackson was running the ball back and you thought the $1 million might just be coming your way?
Well, actually, at first, I thought that if I got the second touchdown, I would just qualify to win $1 million. But as Jackson was running down the field, my husband said, no, if he gets this touchdown, you're going to win $1 million. And after he said those words, there was a flag, and then I didn't know what to think because I just got the information a second before the flag flew down.
Did you know that it was a bad call at the time? Were you suspicious?
I knew it was a bad call. We had season tickets in the 70s. We're Bomber fans. We love our Bombers. My son's quarterback with River East Kodiaks still has the record for most yards passing. We love football. I don't really understand as much as these guys do, but I knew it was a bad call because I didn't see anything wrong on our big, like, we have a TV that my kids gave my husband, and I could see that he never did anything wrong.
Karen, I feel awful for you. I can't imagine how you feel.
Well, it hasn't really, thinking about it, my stomach gets in knots, thinking that that $1 million would have let my daughter stay home for another couple of years so she doesn't have to go to work to leave her one-year-old with, you know, like, we're all going to chip in to babysit here and there. That's the first thing I thought of. If I win that million, like, if I did, after that, I would have, like, my daughter could stay home. She wouldn't have to go to work for another couple of years.
Oh, Karen, well, what a heartbreaker it was for you. I would like to say on behalf of the CFL, thank you for being a fan of the CFL. We hope this doesn't change anything for you, and enjoy that new home theater system you have coming your way.
Oh, for sure. That's wonderful. Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
I really don't understand the laughing. I don't. I know on Twitter a lot of people are having fun with it as well. But when you think about putting yourself in the position of those folks watching the play unfold, and maybe Karen wasn't acutely aware what was going on from a football standpoint, but her husband was there watching, and he knew that if Jackson gets into the end zone, that's $1 million. Like the level of excitement for what they were watching, and for it to be that call, it was just such a horrible call for Miller to, you know, work his way over towards Noel, and Noel just sort of puts out his hand to guide a body coming at him to in protection of himself. And I don't know if the ref just saw Miller fall and then to throw the flag, but just absolutely an atrocious call and absolute heartbreak for Karen Kuldis. And as I said earlier, she mentions there about her daughter going to work and having a little one. Karen Kuldis herself was up at 4:30 this morning for her job at A&W, and they deserve the way that contest is set up. If you get a legit two returns for touchdowns, kickoff returns, that you're supposed to win $1 million, and it was there. It happened in the football world and realm. It happened, but for a horrible call by an official.
I don't think anybody's laughing at her. I think they're laughing at the CFL. They're laughing at the fact that a blown call has taken this away from somebody. So I don't think it's – I understand what you're saying. It's not a joke to them, and it's not a joke to the family. But I don't think the majority of the population are actually pointing at Karen and laughing that she didn't get this money. I think they're laughing at the situation that she literally should have won this money, and CFL
be angry
blew
then.
It for her.
Yeah, that's where I was going
to be angry
go.
Then. Don't be joking on Twitter and all the rest of it. To me, there's just nothing remotely funny about it.
And I'm getting this on Twitter now from Keith Schellenberg. The CFL couldn't afford to dish out that much dough had the refs make the call. No, they didn't. The ref blew a call. There is insurance for these contests. Yeah. Every contest like this has insurance, and how it works is if it's $1 million, you insure it for 10 or 15K, and if it's paid out, the insurance company pays it. So stop with the conspiracy theories of the fact that the Canadian Football League didn't want to pay this lady out. They wouldn't have paid her out. They've already paid for the insurance. It wouldn't have come out of their pocket.
Yeah, you guys know conspiracies are that's my jam, but I mean... It's the same thing with the NHL or any league really, where you wanna jump on officiating. This is just incompetence. There's a difference between a fix being in, and in this case, the CFL being incompetent, and that's what we're seeing. It's just an utter failure, and there's way too many. I know that specific penalty call gets all the highlights, but there's way too many of those every single game in the CFL. Like, it's just at some point it becomes too much, and it just there's too many games, I find at least, where the viewing experience is dulled and it becomes almost unenjoyable to watch a game where you have to watch crap call after crap call, review after review, because these guys can make, never mind some of these 50-50 calls, they can't make the gimmies that are right in front of them. They can't get those ones right, let alone the ones where, you know, it does become a bit of a judgment call. That one last night, shouldn't have even been a thought process for a second in that referee's mind and in his eyes. And for him to drop the flag, it's inexcusable.
It's hard to imagine that the play, that where it was located, as TSN showed us, 5.7 yards behind the returner. Hey, and if it happened, fine and dandy, but I don't know if you were watching that group of athletes, and you would never make that call. To me, you'd make that call seeing Miller falling for the Bombers, and then Noel behind him sort of crumpling over top of him, and you would assume that there was something that happened there. It's just, and so it kind of a call where you're using intuition maybe instead of, because there's no way you saw Noel, if you saw the whole thing develop, there's no way that you would have thought that an illegal block happened. Just an absolute crime.
So the discussion for me is, and this is why I think a positive can come out of this, is if there's not $1 million for a fan on the line with this, we go, man, that game was poorly officiated, and we probably move on. the fact that this has happened is going to put a lot of heat on the Canadian Football League. It brings it in the light that, you know, not only about the fan aspect, but what are you doing about this? Because I go back to the Banks kick return in the Grey Cup in Vancouver for Hamilton against Calgary, and the same play happened. It was a block from behind. However, it was so far from the actual return or the or where the kick returner was. That was brought into light then.
It was a block from behind, though.
Yeah, that's different than this. I don't think this was a penalty at all, but it brings in the light and focuses on what are you doing about this? Like, what is – there were poor call – like, the Ricky Ray hit at the end of last night's game to the head was an absolutely atrocious, vicious hit.
Yeah.
And if the Canadian Football League doesn't wake up, not only about its officiating from this million-dollar kerfuffle or whatever you want to call it, he'll get fined, You want Ricky Ray out of the lineup in Toronto and the CFL for 6 weeks with a concussion? Like, call that.
Yeah.
And give him the ball back. And I'm sorry, Bomber fans, but that's a vicious hit that the play shouldn't have ended or the game shouldn't have ended on.
Agreed.
So I'm hoping something comes to light of this that puts a lot of pressure on fixing the problem of the officiating overall in the Canadian Football League. That being said, on the big show here on TSN 1290, what do you think, what could the league do to make this better for Karen? Karen gets a $25,000 stereo system. However, something needs to be done here. Because the PR from this, like if you send her to the Grey Cup or you give her a pair of Bomber tickets, I'm not saying from the Bomber's perspective, I'm talking about the league to buy a pair of season tickets or do something. But what would you like to see done for Karen on behalf of the Canadian Football League? Or is anything should be done? I feel there should be, but what's your opinion?
I guess just the action of maybe sending them to an all-expense-paid trip type thing to the Grey Cup with her husband being a big fan and her as well enjoying the game, that would be a nice gesture, but you will never ever make up for what happened, right? Every single day of her life, Karen Kudels will wake up, her husband will wake up, and every single day of their life they will think about this at least once, probably 20 times. So there's nothing you can do to make up for it, but I suppose a kind gesture would be welcomed.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the CFL or Safeway or, you know, whoever
Certainly
wants
to... Certainly not Safeway's fault.
Yeah, no, it's not their fault at all. I mean, the contest is pretty cut and dry, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, hopefully some heady organization here gives some kind of cash prize. You know, like, I don't know what the right... I mean, she deserves the money that was rightfully taken away from her, but, man, it makes me sick listening to her talk and just had it taken away from her, right? So, like, I don't know, a cash prize or maybe something even to help her daughter out.
I feel bad for the official as well, because those guys down there, they're trying their darndest, and he just you made a bad call. And now he's also, I'm not sure who it was, but whoever made that call is wearing that around his neck as well, right?
And it's the same as the Darvin Adams didn't line up properly, and the guy told him he was and then called him, you know, offside on that play a couple of years ago too. Like, it's these guys get vilified and they made a bad call. Like I say, we sit on the show. If a player plays bad, if a coach coaches bad, we talk about it. If official blows calls, we talk about it. But he's got to feel awful as well. Yep. Like, just
I don't know how bad I feel anymore. At some point, it just becomes enough. Like I've kind of had enough at this point. And you're right. The Adams play against Calgary, it cost him the game. Cost him at least a chance at coming. Like there's. You know, it didn't have, I mean, even this goal, you know, really did have an impact on the game, right? Where they had
ask the Argos about it.
Well, 4 points taken off the board, right? Yeah. And maybe it becomes a field goal game instead of having to tie the game late. And we're talking about what happened in OT last night. So there's, when you have contests ultimately decided by the officials, like, I don't feel bad for these guys anymore. I'm sorry. Like, it's just, it's enough at this point.
Everybody has a bad day. So you're allowed one or two blown calls. That game last night, I don't know if you should continue. It was terrible. The whole game was terribly officiated by several of the individuals on the field. So what would you do for Karen if you could get the CFL to do something? We'll ask you that in the Boss Pizza fan line. We'll hear from Steve Phillips on the Blue Jays next on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Pick up your official TSN 1290 discount golf card today and hit the greens throughout this summer with great two-for-one deals at a multitude of Manitoba golf courses, including Minnewasta Golf and Country Club, Larders at St. Andrews Golf and Country Club, Granite Hills Golf Club, Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, Kingswood Golf and Country Club, Carmen Golf Club, and the Steinbeck Fly-In, just to name a few. Steinbeck Fly-In Golf Club, of course. Book a tee time and show your card for great rates. Cards are only $34.95 each. Some restrictions apply. To purchase your card and for a complete list of participating courses, visit tsn1290.ca. Jim Troy and Brandon, and the Major League Baseball season continues after the All-Star break tonight. Toronto Blue Jays head to Detroit for a three-game weekend series with the Tigers. We all know the plight of the Jays, and Steve Phillips, ESPN and TSN baseball analyst, weighs in with three things the Jays need to do in order to turn the season around and make the playoffs. Here's Steve Phillips.
With the All-Star game behind us, players headed to the airport in Miami to put themselves in position to get started for the second half of the season on Friday. For the Toronto Blue Jays, they're looking for a much better second half than they had in the first half. If they're going to get to the postseason this year for the third consecutive year, they're going to need three key things to happen. First, as this season began, starting pitching was the key component. In the second half of the season, it's no different. The starting rotation needs to get back on track, led by Marco Estrada. A first-half ERA over 5, giving up 17 home runs. He needs to change the course of his season. It all comes down to the command of the fastball. He needs to get the swing and misses on the fastball up in the zone and swing and misses chasing the changeup down out of the zone. Command is absolutely critical for Estrada. Aaron Sanchez needs to take the ball every fifth day. With the blister problem behind him, he cannot miss a start, and he needs to pitch like a pitcher at the front end of the rotation. That devastating sinker to get the ground balls and that slider to get the swings and misses, Sanchez needs to pitch like an ace if the Jays are headed to the postseason. Now, Francisco Liriano has been hit or miss, but oftentimes he delivers a clunker. The Jays cannot afford any 2 2/3 inning starts from Liriano. He doesn't have to be great, but he can't be awful. He needs to command his fastball, and if he does it, he can stay in the game and give the Jays a chance to win. Those three starters stepping up allows Joe Biagini to go back to the bullpen and do what he does best in critical innings and high-leverage situations. The second key for the Jays is Josh Donaldson. He needs to perform like a most valuable player. He needs to step up and deliver. Now, certainly the calf injury has been the problem this year. He missed almost all of spring training, came back into the season, re-injured himself, and it was a major setback heading in. He has to shake off the rust. There are no more excuses. Donaldson needs to step up and deliver with the bat. He needs to hit for average, driving the ball from line to line, and deliver the clutch RBIs in situations and drive the ball out of the ballpark. He's the energizer. The Jays go as Donaldson goes. And the third key component is team defense. Mark Shapiro said it best. They've been the worst in the American League. And the reality is they have much more talent and potential than what they've performed so far this year. Troy Tulowitzki and Russell Martin aren't what they used to be, but they're better than what they've been. Tulowitzki needs to make the plays and the balls that he gets to, and he's fully capable of doing it. Donaldson has had some throwing issues at times. He needs to get those feet moving. Again, the calf may be a factor there, but he needs to be more accurate with his throwing. And left field has been a black hole for this team, offensively, but even more importantly, defensively. Now, Steve Pearce and Ezekiel Carrera have more than enough talent to get the job done out there. Health has been an issue, but no excuses. They don't have to be the best, but they can't be the worst. Those are the three keys for the Toronto Blue Jays to get to the postseason for the third consecutive year. They can't have just one or two come true. All three of them have to come through if the Blue Jays are going to head to October baseball. If they do, we'll see you in October.
Steve Phillips talking about with the Jays, three main things they need to do to make the postseason. Do you believe? Can they do those three things?
The reason why I don't believe is similar to why when I'm looking for a golfer I'm cheering for on Sunday, and if their name is down on the leaderboard with all kinds of names between them and where they need to get to, it's going to take away a bunch of my excitement. When you look at the Toronto Blue Jays right now, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams between them and the final wild card spot. You know, so, no, I don't feel very confident with the number of teams they've got to climb and wrestle their way through. When they're 5 games behind the final wild card spot and there's 6 teams between them and that wild card spot, Do I think that much magic is going to happen? No, I don't.
Yeah, Steve Phillips also missed a fourth thing the Blue Jays need, and it's a time machine back to 2015 because the offense is done. Like they have too many guys that are over the hill past their prime that are playing pivotal roles in the batting order, and that's what's, you know, the pitching's been okay. It hasn't been as good as it was last year, but it's been okay. But their offense just it kills them. And I think the fact that Josh Donaldson too, you know, we talked about this a month into the season, the Jays might have completely blown the season by rushing him back too early multiple times. And you could tell that it bothered him. You know, he's starting to heat up a little bit now, but, you know, the month before that, not the same Josh Donaldson, not even close to what he was last year. And that might have been kind of the final nail in the coffin where maybe you could survive with JD being an MVP-type candidate, but him hitting, you know, 250 up until a couple of weeks ago, it just puts them in too big of a hole.
And the void of speed on this team is something I don't know how you overcome that from a base running standpoint or from a defensive standpoint. How do you overcome that
to help
those two aspects?
Their base running and their defensive game is atrocious, just awful. And as an owner of Josh Donaldson in a fantasy baseball league, the Hungarian Hammers can tell you he's not coming around enough and needs to be better. We'll take a break and talk with Hot Rod Peterson, voice of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is a proud supporter and will be supporting the 5th Annual Stars 4 Special O Golf Tournament Tuesday, August 23rd at Glendale Golf and Country Club. That's our course, boys. It's a Texas Scramble-style tournament with proceeds going to Special Olympics Manitoba. Lots of fun throughout. Each team is assigned a celebrity golfer to play with for 9 holes. Includes dinners, draws, silent auction, and more. For more details, visit specialolympics.mb.ca. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Lots to get to throughout the rest of the show. And, of course, the 9 a.m. Boston Pizza fan line talking about Karen and if and what the CFL should do for her, and if anything. We'll get your thoughts on that. The Bombers' big win yesterday, 33-25 over the Argos, improving the record to 2-1. And, of course, the Jays get back at it. And the CFL season continues. Lots to get to today, and we're going to start this segment off with our good friend, the radio and TV voice of Saskatchewan Rough Riders and the Regina Pats, Mr. Rod Peterson. How are you, sir?
Hey, good morning, Jim. You're sounding great.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate that. I don't get that a lot around here, Rod.
Well, trust me, my friend, you do. Good morning, everybody. Good to talk to Winnipeg.
Yeah, it's good to have you on, and maybe that's because I usually don't. I don't know. Could go either way, Rod. I guess we'll just start with what about Karen and your thoughts on what took place and where the CFL goes from here with this incident in last night's game.
Well, I tell you, it has been running through my mind several times over the last few weeks. This is why I love sports and why I don't want to work in any other industry than sports. And it's because you never know what's going to happen when a game kicks off or faces off. You never know. So what happened last night in that football game, while tragic if you're Karen Colas, infinitely entertaining for everybody else. And when Troy texted me late last night to say, hey, can you come on? Obviously, I wanted to come on with you guys, but I had to do a little digging. And I found out, do not expect the CFL or VP of football, senior VP of football, Glenn Johnson, to be speaking on this or making any statement on the blown call. On the block to the back, I guess they're just going to move on. And as the TSN panel said last night, Jock Climie and Milt Spiegel, hey, that's sports. It happens. Poor Karen Koldis, a black guy for the CFL. That reminds me, I talked to a CFL assistant coach about this, and he said an embarrassment for the league. So add that to the file, gentlemen. Those are my thoughts this morning on it. Very, very unfortunate.
Your thoughts... Earlier this week, Randy Ambrosi starts his job. On his desk is the Will Hill file for engaging in an aggressive manner, grabbing a ref, and ultimately the one-game suspension handed down. Rod, your thoughts about that specific instance and suspension and what the CFL should go forward or should do going forward with players that engage refs in such a manner?
Well, you know, Troy, and good morning to you, by the way. That's a great road to go down, or a great segue, too, because when it happened the other night, I thought immediately, oh, that's a game. He'll get a game. I didn't think any more or any less. And I knew that it would come down to Randy Ambrosi. I mean, when Mark Cohan was running the league, as much as I love the guy, I don't know that Mark was always the one making the decisions on incidents like this. I think his football department did, and he announced them. This was Randy Ambrosi from the get-go. And, you know, we opened this interview and I said, I love the fact that we go to games never knowing what's going to happen and things happen we've never seen before. I've never seen anybody grab a guy by the, well, it wasn't the throat, to grab a referee by the throat, but close, you know, by the collar. I didn't have a problem with a one-game suspension. I know that's not a popular opinion. A lot of people thought he should have got a lot more. I tried to talk to some CFL officials about what they thought. They weren't saying anything about it. Didn't want to comment publicly on what they thought Will Hill should have got. But I think this went on Randy Ambrosi's desk on his first day on the job. He pounded his fist and said, one game, that's it. That's the way it's going to be. And I love the fact we've got a commissioner that, A, played the game, played in the league, and isn't going to take any guff from anybody. I mean, if Randy Ambrosi deems it to be worthy of one game, Troy, then it's one game. Who's going to argue with Randy Ambrosi? If it had been Jeffrey Orge, we'd probably still be debating it several days later and saying he's not a football guy, he doesn't know what he's talking about. I thought that he got it right. But the funny thing is, of all the years we've been watching football, I've never seen a guy put his hands on a ref. And we were talking about that on our own show, and I thought if anybody were to have done that back in the day, maybe KD Williams would have. Somebody like that. Not even a loose cannon like KD Williams did it. Or Lamar McGregs, who isn't as much of a loose cannon anymore as he used to be. But it reminds me of the WHL playoffs this year where KD Williams' kid, Keegan Colazar, the Seattle Thunderbirds, need a player in the nuts in the middle of a game of the WHL final. Never saw that before either. So it's been an interesting year for firsts, not necessarily good ones, but man, very entertaining.
I've never even heard of that in the WHL either. That's weird,
that
too.
You never heard of it anywhere.
Yeah, anywhere. That's a good point. Rod, what would you do to improve the officiating in the CFL? What could be done? We discussed that earlier and the money it takes and everything else. The CFL, when people complain about the officiating in the NHL and the NFL, it's a different thing to me because they have money. What can the CFL do to improve officiating?
Well, that's tough because I've spent a lot of time talking with Glenn Johnson, and he's got a lot of friends in Winnipeg. He's from Winnipeg.
Yeah.
I'm sure you guys have talked to him about it, too.
Know him well, yeah.
Yeah, it's a really tough one. I think Glenn is a really good guy. For one, it's hard to vilify Glenn for a missed call last night. It's sort of like, how do you blame a coach for a player screw-up on the field? Although, at the end of the day, when there's enough screw-ups, you point the finger at the coach, and the finger's going to be pointed at Glenn Johnson. And it sounds to me today like it already is. But we went through 3 weeks of the CFL schedule this year with unbelievable football games. And the blown calls last night aside, very entertaining game last night, guys. I think we would agree at Investors Group Field. And I've been putting bouquets at Glenn Johnson's feet for the last 3 weeks saying, look, here's the rule changes that he oversaw. Here's the tweaking that Glenn Johnson brought in has brought us this wonderful product. And then the blown calls last night. So I would hope that maybe it's just an anomaly. It's an embarrassing situation for the CFL. I don't know why they get so magnified when it's our league. I mean, let's not forget the Stanley Cup playoffs and the goaltender interference of the Anaheim-Edmonton series or the delays in all the other sports with video replay. It's not just our league. But a lot of work's already gone into improving the officiating in the CFL. Heaven knows the NFL-CFL transfer agreement that we have that worked in the preseason, guys. I don't know that it's necessarily that broken. Just a horrible call at a bad time cost a lady $1 million. And hopefully that's really the only reason that it was magnified. Now, the difference, too, is, and Troy, get your take on this, but the Grey Cup 2014, as you recall, Hamilton has a Grey Cup stolen on a block to the back call on the last play of the game. Takes a $100,000 bonus out of Ken Austin's pocket as head coach of the Ticats. But the league stood back and said it was a block to the back. It was a block to the back. So we made the right call. You may not like it, but that's what it was. Last night, it wasn't a block to the back.
Agreed. And Jim brought that up this morning. I said, hey, that was a penalty. Last night was not a penalty. It was just a real unfortunate call. I got a reference here out of the tunnel letter that you wrote to Randy Ambrosia, and you bring up a couple great points. And one of the points you bring up, Rod, and we've talked about this plenty on this show, one of the fun things that we do in talking about the NHL here is that we have full access to the contracts involved, all the clauses, bonuses, things like that, and it makes for fantastic debate for people that love the players in the league of whatever league you're discussing. For us, it's the NHL. We've talked about how much more entertaining and how much more debate would happen if we had full access to the contracts of the players in the CFL. It would be a lot of fun for those salaries to be public domain, as you point out. A great idea, and the CFL should incorporate that.
Well, I got it. You know what? Before we go any further, I should clarify. That article ran on my website, that column, but I didn't write it. It was one of my staff writers who worked in the CFL and wants to remain anonymous. I don't write my columns anymore, Troy, because I got so much grief over criticizing the CFL and Glenn Johnson, for that matter. I don't write them anymore. So I've hired some guys to write for me. But that was his point, and I will go to the grave not identifying who that guy was. You guys all know him, but who he is. But he said that the contract should be made public, and you know why they aren't. And that's the really tough part. It's because there's, in some cases, and in a lot of cases, so embarrassingly low. It's why fines aren't announced in the CFL, because it's $250 to bowl Levi Mitchell for criticizing officiating on Twitter last week. It's just that they think it makes the league look bush because the salaries are so low. When we talk about $180,000 to Daron Carter to sign with the Rough Riders, it's huge money in the CFL. That's one check for Patrick Laine. That, I believe, is the reason why it's not publicized and may never be publicized, to be honest with you. I'd be interested to get you guys' take. But the other thing is, so blown calls, bad officiating makes the CFL look way worse than, inexpensive $52,000 contracts for rookies or a quarterback criticizing officiating on Twitter. That's another reason why he was fined, because it made the league look bad.
Yeah, there's no reason. So fine them more. To me, people who are fans of the CFL have a very astute understanding of what the salaries are, and that they're considerably lower than the major league sports, right?
Doesn't the PA have to sign off on that, though? Isn't it a percentage, in the National Hockey League, where they come to an agreement in the CBA of what you can be fined as a max?
Oh, absolutely. Of course. But the point is, a guy's making $52,000 in the CFL as a rookie. How much more can you fine him?
Yeah.
The maximum fine in the CFL as it is $1,000. And none of that stuff is disclosed. All because, I know you got a lot of CFL people listening to you this morning. If I'm wrong, I'm sure they'll let me know. They always do. But that's the reason why they're not publicized. Because when we try to operate on a level with the NHL, because we're in a lot of NHL markets, yours is one, that the numbers are just so minuscule that it makes the league look. I don't even like using the term Bush League, but that's the term the way it was put to me.
I wonder if that hurts the very most, Rod, in places like Toronto, Vancouver. I wonder if that just adds to the sort of the B league aspect of the CFL perception in those major markets.
Isn't this but a major thing for Randy Ambrosi to talk about? Because as you know, we all know what the salaries are in the CFL. The fans know what it is. But we came away from last year's Grey Cup in Toronto, the worst one anybody's been at, saying this league's trying to be NFL light, and it's failing miserably. It is what it is. Let's embrace it for what it is, a fan-friendly, blue-collar league that the fans identify with the players they're paying to go watch. So, yeah, but Randy Ambrosi's a blue-collar guy, even though he worked a white-collar job just before becoming the commissioner of the CFL. This is something that he needs to get a grip on, because the CFL governors and owners are the ones that have allowed it to drift away from what it is. That's my opinion, and we'll see where it goes. But the guy, so Randy dealt with Will Hill, dealt with it swiftly and, in my opinion, correctly. Now I'll be interested to see if he calls Glenn Johnson into his office today and says, Glenn, what are we doing here? Boy, would I love to be a fly on the wall in that meeting.
For sure. Rod Peterson, the voice of the Riders, is joining us today on TSN 1290. He's the Big Show, 47 minutes past the hour. Also, you can read his fine stuff at rodpeterson.com. Right before we let you go, Rod, the Riders got their first win of the year. They're 1-2. They could be, if not for a missed field goal, 2-1, but woulda, coulda, shoulda. What's your impressions as the Riders head into their bye week, how their season has started?
Well, they're coming around, Jim. Thanks for asking. I think I really do that the worst is over here. Banjo Bowl 2014 is when all of these, you know, misfortunes started with Darian Durant getting hurt. I think it's finally turning around. Winnipeg winning last night didn't help, but kudos to the Bombers for winning. They're in a very tough division. I don't even know if they're going to be a playoff team. A crossover is looking likely, which is cool, but they're not even talking about that here. They're building an exciting team. Guys like Daron Carter, Damon Roosevelt, Willie Jefferson are becoming stars already in this province. Kevin Glenn's playing better than he ever has, or any time that I've seen them. So it looks like they're coming together. So finally, it's not all gloom and doom in this province. And people are all talking about Labor Day. They're interested to see how the Riders and Bombers stack up against each other again. That's weeks away, but the Riders' next game is a week from Saturday in Calgary. We plan to make that a home game, as it always is when the Riders go there. It's fun times. It's a great summer here in Saskatchewan.
As it should be. Rod, always a pleasure. Thanks for your time and enjoy your weekend.
Thanks, gents. Have a good weekend. See you, Westy.
Take care, brother. Thanks so much.
We'll take a break and hit on the NHL news and notes when the Big Show returns to TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to support the fifth and final HSC Foundation Celebrity Human Race. It's your chance to race around Winnipeg, competing in challenges and puzzles with your team's celebrities September 22nd and 23rd. The money raised allows the HSC Foundation to improve care for Manitoba families, research initiatives, cutting-edge medical equipment, and state-of-the-art facilities. To learn more or to register, visit tsn1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on the Royal Sports Power Hour on The Big Show. On TSN 1290, an hour away almost from your calls on the Boss Pizza fan line. Bombers beat the Argos. What about Karen? Jays are back at it. Are you sick of Mayweather-McGregor yet? Because there's another press conference in England today. You know what I'd like to see at these press conferences? The reason I've grown tired of them and think they're a debacle and a gong show is because I'd like somebody to ask Conor McGregor how he thinks he can beat Mayweather, and I want to know Mayweather, like, how are you going to approach this fight, and what do you, like, some legitimate questions at the press conference would be great.
I agree with that. Instead of the you know, standing up on stage and the lewdness and the crude, like, to have a little bit of a legit, and I'm sure, I guess you will, maybe a little closer to the fight here, to actually hear some intelligent conversation, and they are holding their own press conferences after these gong show sort of splashy things. But I will say this: this thing in London it will be interesting. It's going to be wild and crazy again. But I just I'm tapping out on the lewdness of it. Like the language involved and some of the things being said is a little over the, or way over the top for me.
NHL news and notes: Michael Ferland gets a 2-year deal with the Calgary Flames for $3.5 million. You like the idea, the contract? I mean.
Well, what I really like is just what the Calgary Flames are doing here, and I really wonder if it transforms into, you know, all these the enhancements, the moves, a contract like this here, does it all turn out for the Calgary Flames? It so often doesn't turn out for teams, the additions and all the rest of it that they that you put together here, but this contract at 1.7, you can't really, you know, anytime you're talking about a contract less than $2 million in the NHL, really, you get some minimal level of production here from a player. And you, when you're talking like Ferland, you're talking about 0.3 points or so a game. That's how do you criticize a contract like that, so long as you're okay with what he does defensively and he's got decent possession numbers?
And the dude hits like a fire truck.
And, I like what he brings.
But he has a little bit of skill to his game, too. Like, that's, to me, Michael Ferland is the kind of guy you want to fill out your fourth line with. where
Manitoba boy.
Well, of course, right? I mean, and a former Weedy as well. But, you know, not shy whatsoever with the physical game, which is still an important aspect of hockey, even with kind of the transition to the speed and skill. But the dude can play. So he's that. Like, I have no problem with guys like that on a fourth line, or if you want to slot him higher up into the lineup. I know he played a bunch with Gaudreau and Monahan at the end of the year. But that's kind of the new age fourth liner. You know, a guy that could, you know, if he has the chance, 15 goals, that's a pretty solid number for a depth piece.
Yeah, 25 points, 15 goals last year. And you mentioned it, Brandon Wheatking's 2011-12, 96 points, 47 goals in 68 games, battled injuries and, of course, some off-ice issues since then and looking at his stats. But 18 points in 71 games 2 years ago. Last year, 25 points, 76 games, 2 years, $3.5 million. Not too bad for Michael Ferlin. Andrew Ferentz retires after 16 seasons. He hasn't played for a couple of years and just sort of waiting for his contract to run out, but he makes it official. 907 games, 225 points, 43 goals. Last season with the Edmonton Oilers, he played six games in 2015-16. That was his last season. Mm-hmm. Thoughts on his career? Eighth round pick originally.
Yeah.
900 games. That's pretty good for an eighth round pick.
Those stories are always awesome. You got to give some pretty good props to anybody that has a career as long as that. And it doesn't really matter what you're doing. When you're talking pro sports, playing at a level and getting paid playing a sport for that long and with having little expectations. Maybe you and your family believe in you when you're coming into the situation, and to have a career that long, that's impressive stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he was an all right player. Like, I don't know. It's a good story, really. Mm-hmm. And there's, I don't know. He was just kind of a. It sounds kind of hard. He was just kind of another guy, on defense, just kind of a depth guy. You know, so impressive that for a guy who wasn't really super skilled or anything to stick around that long is
being just quite another guy in the best league in the world is still very impressive stuff.
I can't wax poetic about Andrew Ferentz. I'm sorry. Like, the best part about Andrew Ferentz is he flipped off Montreal during a playoff game. That was awesome. Other than that, I
played 907 games. He won a Stanley Cup with Boston. He went to the final with Calgary. It's not like he was awful.
I never said he was awful. I don't really have a lot of words about Andrew Ferentz.
I thought he was pretty he was part of.
I didn't think he was a great player.
Real solid team with Bob, but he was part of what was a wonderful team and era in Boston. Really, right? They were a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah,
6 years in Boston, 4 years in Calgary. Also played for the Penguins at the start of his career and wrapped it up with the Edmonton Oilers.
It's Boston he'll be remembered for, though, right?
Well, that in Calgary, like, he was a god in Calgary that year. They went on that magical run in 04. Like, he was one of the guys that he was laying out bodies and was instrumental. I think he scored a big goal in overtime against San Jose to take a game on the road. Like, he sort of got a following there, but you're right. He went to Boston, and then he was, like, a cult hero there. And maybe because of the bird to the Montreal fans, that'll endear you to Boston Bruins fans forever. We'll take a break, and Matt Dunnigan joins us on The Big Show next on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to present MTS Super Spike July 21st and 22nd at Maple Grove Rugby Park. Team registration deadline is this Friday at midnight at superspike.ca. Choose any skill level, recreational, intermediate, or competitive. Headliners on the concert stage this year include the Sam Roberts Band, the Lytics, the Treble, and more. Weekend passes for all shows are on sale now at superspike.ca, or keep listening to TSN 1290 this week for your chance to win tickets. All proceeds from this year's event go to Volleyball Manitoba, Kidsport Manitoba, and the True North Foundation. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki with you on The Big Show, TSN 1290. The Bombers with a big win yesterday over the Argos at IGF, 33-25. We'll talk about that. We got a six-pack of picks coming up. Jets signed two players, and what about Karen? We'll open the Boston Pizza fan line at 9 o'clock for your thoughts on all of that and more here on The Big Show. Right now, we're very happy to welcome back in a legend in the Canadian Football League and a big part of the CFL and TSN, Mr. Matt Dunnigan. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I guess we'll just start with your impressions of the Bomber win last night, 33-25 over the Argos.
Well, it wasn't pretty. They did what they had to do and found a way to win, and you know, you got to do that at home. And heck, you got to do that week in, week out. It's been a dogfight just about all season for most of these football games, and I didn't expect anything less last night when these two teams met, because Toronto's playing well, and but I thought Toronto played well enough to win, but Winnipeg found a way to, you know, come out there with the victory, and that was much needed because they needed to win at home, and that was just a big ugly win for them.
Matty, how surprised are you, or what do you think of this wave or evolution in the CFL and just the difference in play calling, how often passes are being called over run plays these days?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Unprecedented what we're seeing, Troy. As a quarterback, you know, certainly when I was in Winnipeg, we tried to seek balance, helps the big boys out up front. I think it levels the playing field for those guys, and they're able to have more tools in the toolbox in order to be successful, as opposed to pass pro 24/7. But I thought that Paul LaPolice, for the most part last night, the offense coordinator there in Winnipeg, did a nice job of keeping a very tough defense off balance, Troy, and I thought he got in a groove several times, you could see it when it was happening. You could feel it in the consistency and the fluidity of the play calls and how guys were popping wide open. So, you know, and then you get down there tight and you got one of the best players in the Canadian Football League, and Andrew Harrison, to give him the ball, and he does his business. You know, it's all about being good, Troy, on first and 10, putting yourself in second and manageable. And you'll talk to any offensive coordinator, any quarterback, and they'll tell you the same thing. And whether it's passing or running the football to get you there, you know, it's 6-1 way, half a dozen another. It's just a matter of trying to be consistent, moving chains, staying on the field, and controlling the line of scrimmage. And I believe in a balanced attack, but certainly we're not seeing that this year, and I didn't see it last night either, but it's good to see Andrew Harris get more involved, because he's a game changer.
Yeah, big night for Harris last night. Matt, Karen Kuldress loses $1 million on a blown call from the CFL, and that's brought everything into light. But to me, it was just not just that call. It was poorly officiated. It wasn't consistent. And I'm wondering your thoughts on CFL officiating and how it can be improved.
I'm not sure if I'm going to give you the answers to make that happen, but I'm disappointed just like everybody else. Disappointed last night, particularly the last 3 minutes of these ball games, when there are no challenges, basically, and it has to go to command center. There were several calls last night that were missed that could have that should have been called, just blatant headshots to quarterbacks, and it's that's just frustrating to me, is when coaches can't are not in a position to challenge something that has been missed, and there's been plenty of that going on. But I can tell you this. There's a lot of negative focus on missed blown calls, whatever you want to call it. But there was a lot of stellar play last night. And for the most part, guys, you know, I'm going to bat for these guys. It's the most difficult game to officiate, and these guys do a pretty daggum good job. But when they don't get it right and they have an opportunity to get it right in video review in the command center, that's what's a head scratcher to me. It was put into place to get it right. Now, put a time frame on it. I understand that you want to be quick and efficient in your video reviews, and we've been able to do that as a league, and we've pushed hard for that for TSN and production values. And the games are faster than they ever have been in the last 5 years. I think at 2 minutes and 47 seconds, so 2 hours and 47 minutes, and so. To me, that's huge, and it's a step in the right direction. But to sacrifice getting it right, which is why video review is put into play in the first place, for just the sake of speed, then you know, we've missed the point. You know, let's get it right. And it's disappointing when calls like that. We have a spotter that we have somebody in the booth in the command center all the time there to help the officials on the field. And there was some help needed last night, and there was no interjection that happened, and that's disappointing when they do not utilize the system for what it's been put into place for. And it's just disappointing. But for the most part, guys, these guys get it right. But when they don't, and they don't use the system like it's supposed to be used, then that's what's disappointing to me. It's there. We have the means to get it right. We're just not utilizing them properly.
Matty, I don't think it matters what sport you're talking about or what level we're talking about. There seems to be a slow, steady erosion of respect for officials in sport in a general sense. And looking at the Will Hill situation where he aggressively grabs a ref around the collar sort of a thing, and then the CFL hands down a one-game suspension. Should the CFL put something into effect to protect their officials better than that? And is it also a part of the responsibility here that the CFL helps to set an example for the game in a larger scope?
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's our responsibility, but we've been put in a position to do that. Our new commissioner, Randy Ambrosi, has stated that he's going to have something put together fairly soon for consistency as far as that goes. And I think the hammer came down swift and quickly and adequately with the Will Hill decision. And that was an easy decision for myself and I think for Randy. That's a no-brainer. You know, this is not allowed, and it's just a matter of getting some consistency there and some protocols in place and a formula that people have to adhere to. And if not, it would be a very quick and concise and firm punishment because that's not allowed in sport. And, you know, when you do see it, it's very, very traumatic. You know, it's like, oh, my goodness. Did that just happen? And you can't see it because it's just not part of play, not part of sportsmanship, and it's not allowed in sports. So I was happy with what Randy Ambrosi and the CFL offices did, and I'm looking forward to them getting some protocols in place, a little firmer, I think, standards for not only the Canadian Football League, but hopefully other leagues to abide by. But yeah, this is an opportunity for us, Troy, to set the precedent and come down hard on that unfortunate behavior that from time to time happens, and just not allow it again.
Matt Dunnigan joining us this morning on the Big Show on TSN 1290, 14 minutes past the hour. Ricky Ray's been a good story for the Toronto Argonauts this year so far. Are you surprised at how well he's played this season for the Argos?
I'm not at all. He's got a coach that gets the most out of his quarterbacks. They've got an amped up receiving core, and if they could have caught the ball last night, they come out with another victory. A handful of drops in the end zone, not taking away anything from the Winnipeg defense. They played extremely well, and they had to. And I thought that offensive line did a nice job of keeping the Toronto defense off of Matt Nichols for the most part. But Ricky Ray is doing what Ricky Ray does, and he's a veteran quarterback that's been there and sees the defense extremely well. It's all about making positive decisions and right decisions in a Mark Trestman offense, and you can see that they're a match made in heaven with the receiving core. They had the problems last night, but I think that's a much improved football team. I think Winnipeg figured that out last night.
Matt, we appreciate your time as always. Thanks for doing this, and enjoy your weekend.
Oh, yeah, you guys. Congratulations on the big victory. I know it's huge for home fans there in the best group field, and I can tell you it's good for the Canadian Football League. Things are tight all around the league, and that's the way we like it.
Thanks so much, Matty. Take care, brother.
See y'all.
Season is off to a great start here on for the CFL. We'll take a break here and much more to come. Of course, a six-pack at the bottom of the hour. And some more hockey talk next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Is this
hippie music?
Is this Karen Carpenter?
Sounds like. I don't know if it's her, but
it's Cage the Elephant.
Is it really?
Whatever that means.
Love Cage the Elephant, actually.
Think we should be in Frisco. Mid-70s.
Start a revolution to help CFL officiating. Protest the man. Make a difference. Yes, at 1290, it's proud to be a media sponsor of the 2017 Canada Summer Games. It's coming up July 28th, and it'll go till August 13th. It'll have 16 sports, 250 events. It'll be the 50th anniversary of the Canada Summer Games. We'll welcome over 20,000 visitors. It's Friday, and until Friday, July 21st, you can help paint the town red, yellow, and orange. Wear your official 2017 Canada Summer Games clothing. Take a picture of yourself and share the photo using the handle at 2017 Canada Games. And the hashtag gear up for a chance to win a Via Rail promotional travel credit. Visit canadagames.ca/2017 for more information about Game Gear Fridays. Opening and closing ceremonies are set for July 28th and August 13th as well. And you can get tickets for that at ticketmaster.ca. And 11 days and 150 artists with fireworks every night will be some of the events at the Manitoba Liquor and Lotteries Canada Games Festival. In the place to be, July 29th to August 12th, or during that festival. Once again, you can go to canadagames.ca/2017 for the full festival lineup. That'll be down at the Forks. Gentlemen, a great piece by Travis Yost on tsn.ca as we discuss this about this upcoming CBA watch. It's a couple seasons away in the National Hockey League, but as the CBA watch grows, so do the signing bonuses, like Mr. Carey Price and Mr. Connor McDavid. You mentioned this, Troy. Do we expect to see more and more of this, of these NHLers padding their bonuses in these massive contracts heading towards the CBA?
Oh, yeah. And it's not just the massive contracts, right? It's pretty much anyone that can squeeze it in to their deal. I saw a pretty healthy list of players that have this type of insurance in case there is a lockout and that sort of thing. And I also saw a piece talking about escrow, and I can't remember the other sticky point, but that the players will exercise that option to take a stand here at, was it next September? Is it, or I can't remember the date.
2019, I believe.
Yeah, so yeah. That the players will for sure be taking advantage of that early time to negotiate and kick in the whole CBA thing. So there's trouble on the horizon, and every player that can work this into the contract is doing so.
Total salaries being paid by signing bonus from 2017 to 20, it's over 25% in 2020-21, and that's the highest. In 2019-20, it's about 15%, 2018-19, 10%, and the same for next year, just over 10%. Like, these contracts are sort of, as you pointed out, they're stacking some cash away in the 2020-21 season.
Yeah, and that number there, I think, basically puts it damn near close to 100% that we're going to have an extended lockout or strike, or some kind of labor stoppage is going to happen in 2020. There's almost no doubt in my mind, because when the players have that much kind of guaranteed money coming to them, you're digging your heels in more than ever at that point, aren't you, right? When that's kind of the one thing the owners have over the players in any league, right, is they, hey, you guys can sit it all you want. You're not sitting on hundreds of millions of dollars or billions of dollars in a lot of cases. Now with the players getting a bunch of this guaranteed money no matter what, if they're really steadfast in certain issues that they really truly believe in, I don't know. We might see something similar to 3-4 years ago, right, where there was that kind of shortened 48-game season.
The only thing is, brother, as far as sitting out, it is nowhere near the majority of players that have this worked into the contract, and you're going to get further separation of class more or less, with the NHL players. And I really wonder, how strong can your union be when there's such a separation between the have and the have-not, or the elite players and this diminishing middle class with all the lower type of contracts that exist, and certain guys are going to be getting big chunks of money, other guys are going to have nothing coming in. How in the world do you stay strong for any lengthy period of time with that kind of disparity between the players?
But this trend is just beginning. Like, we're just seeing the start of it, right? So you have a couple more years still of free agency, of RFAs coming up to their next contract. So it's not like this is, I don't think, ending, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is just kind of the beginning that we're seeing. And it's the same thing with no movement clauses and no trade clauses. Like, I assume owners and GMs don't want to give these out. But if it comes down to you losing out on a player, or him potentially walking away, or anything like that, the GMs will hand out more of these types of deals. And I think you're just going to see more and more bonus money begin to be handed out until it gets to the negotiating table.
But when you are talking, what 700 players, whatever it is?
It's 700
in that range, what, 100? 100 will have things in place to pay to be covered here if there's a lockout?
Well, and right now, the guys we're talking about, they might be heavily involved in the union, but I mean, Carey Price and Connor McDavid, and like, those are the guys that don't need somebody fighting for them because they're getting paid an extreme amount of money. It's the middle class, as you also pointed out, Troy, rightfully, that the middle class in the NHL, like the entry-level contracts or the second contracts, are becoming very big, like Connor McGregor or Connor McDavid's. You look at Carey Price, it's that middle class of your third contract, 30-year-old year that are really the guys that are becoming the lowest paid in the National Hockey League, unless you're a superstar. Like, the superstars, they might be active and be fighting for their brother in the union, but they're getting paid regardless. It's like Richard Sherman points out in the National Football League, and rightfully so, if we're going to get anything done, if we're going to get guaranteed contracts, if we're going to do this with the money that's available in the National Football League, we have to strike. But Richard Sherman's also a guy with $40 million, guaranteed. It's the guy on the practice roster their first year in the National Football League that is going to be sitting there going, you know, as they talked on the Mike and Mike show prior to our show this morning, I just had a baby. I just bought a car. I have payments. And not necessarily a fancy car. So where this is going is interesting. It's standing out to me. You mentioned it last week, and now looking at this piece by Travis Yost on TSN.ca, rightfully so, that these bonuses and the amount of money being paid out in 2020-21 season is very much higher than what they've been negotiated in contracts so far in 2018-19 and 2019-20.
I think it's just a basic thought process that the larger the space is between the have and the have-not players in the NHL, the more difficult it'll be to stand side by side or back to back come these difficult times in negotiations where strikes and lockouts and all those sort of things come to play. It's going to be harder to maintain a cohesive group with and share a similar vision. So and that works in the favor of the owners, of course.
We just got a tweet from listener Mike Calvert, who put out from Alan Walsh. I didn't see this yesterday on Twitter, but he put out on July 13th. From Alan Walsh, the agent, of course, for Andrei Pavlik and several other stars in the National Hockey League, want to see NHL thrive, reach new heights, get rid of the salary cap, replace with revenue share luxury tax system, get rid of Bettman.
Revenue that kills markets like the Jets. There's no.
Oh, yeah.
And I understand the free market notion to that, and you see it, you know, baseball, it's working for whatever it's worth, but the protection of parity that a salary cap gives, I don't believe the whole open things up and pay the luxury tax. I don't think that's best for the league.
Yeah, that's an agent, of course, Alan Walsh. We'll take a break. Hey, the six-pack is next, and we're now a half an hour away from your calls on the Boss Pizza fan line on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Robertson College present Manitobaville. We're awarding $25,000 to put towards a project that enhances one special Manitoba community. And to enter, you rally your friends and your family and make a video about your hometown. Tell us how $25,000 could make it an even better place to live. Is there something your community needs? Is there an existing project that requires more money? Can it enhance tourism and the lives of people who stay there? Record a video telling us about how your hometown would spend $25,000 and send it to us at tsn1290.ca before noon today. The deadline is today, Friday, July the 14th at high noon, as I like to call noon, high noon. 10 finalists will be revealed on Monday, July 24th, and the public will vote for a winner to receive the $25,000. Manitobaville, make your hometown even prouder. Presented by Robertson College and proudly supported by Chicken Chef, Star Ready to Move Homes, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, Merrick Contractors. For more info and official rules and regulations, visit tsn1290.ca. This is The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rowicki. 9 o'clock, Boss Beats Fan Line, Bombers Beat the Argos. The officiating... What about Karen? Mayweather-McGregor. Getting a lot of heat on Twitter about Mayweather-McGregor and why we're covering it. And I don't understand that.
You're getting a lot of heat?
Yeah, you might not like... For 3 days now. And I understand that people might not like the event and think it's not a boxing match or MMA. It's going to be the most watched thing on the planet. It's the lead story in every sports station or channel the past 2 days. Like, we're going to cover it. I apologize to those people who don't think it's a good event and don't want to watch it. Fair enough. But it's not like we're not going to cover it. It's a major sporting event.
I've seen one person complain about it, man. I don't know who's contacting you. But
I got three people today.
Well, three's not very many, right?
Well,
yeah. So
it's the biggest story in sports right now.
It's the biggest story
in
sports.
And it's going to be – and when it all goes down, it's going to – basically, the sports planet's going to stop and to see what happens.
Stop. The planet will stop rotating on that event. Well, weigh in on that, too, on the Boss Pizza fan line on the McGregor-Mayweather fight of Yet Enough. I do admit it is a gong show, but that's what we'll talk about as well. Hey, speaking of gong shows, do you know what time it is? Michael Jordan used to get in the huddle or Scottie Pippen or the Bulls games and say, "What time is it?" And everyone would yell, "Game time!" What time is it? You know, this is why we don't win anything. I just asked you what time it was.
That's not why we don't win anything.
That is exactly why.
There's a number of reasons. That's not one
I'm
of them.
I'm already yelling, and I don't want to be. I don't want to be yelling. Let me just strap this headset on more tight. Make sure it doesn't come off. Didn't do well in the six-pack last week.
That's why we're not winning.
Not even Boy Wonder. How'd you do?
You know what? I thought I had it with the Bombers. I thought I had it. And I'll take the blame. That was a my bad. Hashtag my bad.
Well.
2-0 here, boys, last week.
2-0. Yeah,
Troy's on a bit of a heater.
Back is getting sore.
Westy's pulling his weight. He's carrying about 678 combined pounds on that back between us two. No offense, Brandon. 400 of that is
me. How could I take that badly?
400 of that is me. Here we go. It's the Friday six-pack. And yes, the Mayweather-McGregor gong show has become a gong show. It's not on the ticket. You can bet on it. You can bet on everything there. By the way, tickets for that thing start at $500 face value and go up to $10,000 to see that fight live. That's face value. $500 just to get in the door. Well, we'll let you behind the door of the Big Show six-pack right now. And in honor of the McGregor-Mayweather, I kind of felt the swearing was over the top. But sometimes swearing can be funny. So be prepared, because the Calgary Stampeders are going to Montreal to face the Alouettes. And who looks like McGregor? Who has the beard of McGregor? The man with three first names. Bo Levi Mitchell. And I'll tell you what! Every time I see Bo Levi, I want to, you know, get into a and Bo Levi and the offense, because the Calgary defense is it, and Montreal, come on, Montreal, you got to be kidding me. So hear this, and believe me later, that the, and God. And for that reason, and that reason alone, I'm going with the Stampeders paying 155. Brandon.
I'll try and clean it up a bit. No promises, but I'll do my best.
You apologize to my big Irish.
Never mind. I'm going to keep this short and sweet. I lost my voice yesterday at the Bomber game, so I'm just not going to put a whole lot of effort into this. It's mail it in Friday. I got Ottawa-Edmonton, the late one tonight, and Ottawa's a bit of an odd team, and maybe a pro-liner's dream so far this year. And you boys know how much I love my ties, and maybe we love our ties. But Ottawa at 0-2-1, three ties to start the year. So who am I to deny them a fourth straight tie later tonight? And Ottawa's been a bit unlucky, but I think they're going to take down the Eskies for their first win and Edmonton's first loss of the year. How about, no one's really talking about Trevor Harris so far. Mm-hmm. He's playing. I know Ricky Ray's getting all the pub because he's 55 years old, no hair, but he can still throw the ball. That's great. But Trevor Harris is the best quarterback in the CFL right now. And Greg Ellingson is no slouch either at wide receiver. Most yards per game so far in the CFL this season. So I think Trevor Harris does enough and outlasts Mike Riley at Edmonton tonight. So we'll take our first. I don't think it's our last, but it'll be our first tie of the week.
Oh,
paying 3.8. Ottawa squeaks out a W at Edmonton tonight.
I'll tell you what, I took Trevor Harris my first 3 weeks of CFL fantasy, and I wish I took him this week because I had Ricky Ray.
Ooh.
Fantasy has ruined sports for people because I'm literally sitting at the Bomber game going, hope the Bombers win, but could you punch a few TDs in there, Ricky, and help the Hungarian Hammers out?
I'm going to keep this in the CFL, and I... BC at Hamilton. Hamilton is so horrible. Can they actually keep up this horrible? I really want to pick a tie in this game. BC going to Hamilton. Hamilton at some point in time under Kent Austin with a healthy Zach Caleros, they're going to at some point accumulate more than 208 yards on offense, aren't they? And how in the world do you have the differential of 489? Basically 490 to 208. That's your net D allowed and net O achieved. That's just mind-boggling number. So I can't pick a tie. You got to look at BC, who's got, on average, 144 more net offense yards than Hamilton's putting up. And they allow, on average, 136 less defensive yards. It's just... The numbers are ridiculous. Add on top of that the West so far against the East, again, tragically for the whole parity thing in the CFL. 8-1-1 up to this point in time, the West is against the East. That is likely to continue and spread as this weekend unfolds. So I'm going to shy away from the 340 of that tie that I love to pick. And I go say 180, take BC to take care of the Ticats. Lions beat Ticats anyway, if you're talking mascots, right? Take the 180, take the Lions, and go catch that sucker.
I like that pick! Love it! Love that pick! I thought you were going to go tie. I was like, oh no. Oh no. Gentlemen, the boys of summer are back. After they went down in Miami... Shasted all over the field, if you know what I mean, in the little...
Should have got the beeper out for that one.
Cuban music that plays down there in the tropics. Yeah, I like the All-Star game for the first time in a long time. But hey, the Colorado Rockies. I'm all about the Rockies this year. They look good to me. And they're going into New York to take on the boy hair wonder, DeGrom. I know Brandon likes DeGrom. He likes the lead. He likes the salad. But somebody else has a greasier mullet going and pitching in the Major Leagues of Baseball, and it's John Gray. And young John Gray, like young Jon Snow, who returns to Game of Thrones this weekend, who doesn't want to know what's going on with that weird show? Kinky as it is. Never hear kinky on a lot of sports shows.
No. Doesn't come into play in most sports.
You might not hear it again either. Ever. On this show. John Gray, 2-0, 3.75 ERA. DeGrom, 9-3, 3.65 ERA. How do you pick a game like this, especially with the road team? Well, it's paying 205. That's how you pick it. You want to get greasy. You want to make some money. You got to work hard. The Rockies are going to hit a couple bombs coming off the All-Star game. Charlie Blackman, the bearded wonder, looks like he could be on Game of Thrones, which once again returns on Sunday. Kinky that show is. Blackman's kinky, the Rockies are kinky, and I don't know anymore. But go Rockies, paying 205.
All right, we'll stick with baseball. And the Phillies, I think, have two wins on the season so far. It's been a tough year in Philly. It's been a tough couple of decades in Philly, if we're being totally honest.
Philly's like our six-pack picks this year, hasn't it?
Yeah, you gotta love them, but they don't win much. But I did take the Phillies 2 weeks ago in Arizona on the road, and they came through then.
I remember.
And guess what? They're on the road tonight in Milwaukee against the Brew, and they're getting it done again tonight. And the main reason, probably the only reason I'm making this pick, Nick Pivetta. Doesn't sound familiar?
Who?
Canadian boy.
What?
That's right. Victoria, BC's own. And he's having a pretty good year so far. An ERA under 4 for the Phils. A couple of wins so far. His ERA is actually 3.20 if you exclude his major league debut. So he's tossing the heat out there for the Phils. And I expect a West Coast wobbler, some Vancouver velocity. I don't have any more alliteration for you. That's the extent of how I'm going. But
some island high shake.
But I like the Phillies tonight to grab a win off the All-Star break. Taking on the Brewers in Milwaukee. It's paid pretty tidy, too. I believe 2.15. How about that? So a little extra sprinkle for the boys on a fun Friday.
I don't like that pick. I don't like that pick.
I'm going to take my last choice to the pitch, boys, and go venture into the Gold Cup a little bit.
The beautiful game.
Not so long ago, around the young fellas in soccer practice, and we were discussing how no one ever talks about Canada's men's national team or any of the players. I don't know if Alfonso Davies, the young 16-year-old phenom, is going to be healthy or not. Looked to me like it wasn't much of a tweak on his ankle. Walked off the pitch fine and dandy at the end of that game, but whether he's there or not, I think Canada's got a fantastic chance up against Honduras. Honduras, three consecutive Gold Cup games where they haven't scored a goal, and Luis Lopez, their keeper, was out of his mind with 10 stops in what was a 0-0 draw recently. They've played two games. They have yet to score a goal. They've only allowed one goal, and then you look at Canada with 5 goals and 3 goals allowed. I think Canada is going to continue to be successful here against Honduras with or without Alfonso Davies. And if by chance you have yet to see Canada play and yet to see the brilliance of Alfonso Davies at 16 years old, you've got to check him out sometime. Finally, Canada has a young male soccer star and will for years to come. Take Canada against Honduras and get 265 for the pick.
I like it. 290 for the tie. They tied Costa Rica. I think they pound Honduras. I hope they do.
Yeah.
Going to be a good game tonight. All right. To recap on a McGregor-Mayweather gong show week here on The Big Show, I got Calgary and Bo Levi Mitchell looking Conor McGregor going into Montreal and as much as they can.
That was my computer froze. I'm so sorry. It's just a bad start to the six pack.
Calgary's paying 155, and Colorado is going into New York to take on DeGrom on what will be the Game of Thrones mullet match. I'm taking Colorado paying 205. 155 for Calgary Stampeders, 205 for the Colorado Rockies.
Had to take a tie. Ottawa. Let's go with 2-point win. 2-point win in Edmonton tonight, paying 3.8. And Nick Pivetta, the Canadian boy, gets
Nicky.
It done for the Phillies in Milwaukee, paid 215.
Let's go to the CFL first. Take BC over the lifeless Hamilton Tiger Cats.
No life.
Paying 180. And also right now the West 8-1-1 against the East. Very good chance of being 11-1-1 after this weekend. And then venture over to the Gold Cup and whether Alfonso Davies is good to go or not. Canada will take down Honduras and that'll pay you 265, baby.
And keep your hands to yourself if you're the Hamilton Tiger Cats this weekend, please. $5 on those 6 picks on Sports Select will pay you $619 and 15 cents. You can get 7 to 8 double bubbles with that 15 cents. That's the kicker, 619.15 on $5. Spread a little shekels on your sports slack. That's a six-pack on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
This segment is a presentation of Olympic Homes. Get an Olympic coach in your corner and build with confidence. Visit them online at olympichomes.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon, and the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Going to open in 7 minutes at the top of the hour. Also remind you that you can stream us on the iHeartRadio app on all your favorite devices or get a customized playlist to suit your mood or activity. Your music, your stations, always free. Download the iHeartRadio app today and stream on. The Blue Bombers beat the Argos 33-25 last night, gentlemen. Your thoughts on the victory helping the Bombers go to 2-1 on the season?
I thought the boys were in all kinds of trouble, heaps of trouble after that first half when you had the Argos go down to the 11 twice of the Bombers, down to the 27 twice for the line of scrimmage. In all four occasions had to settle for field goals. And then Ricky Ray tossing the pill around for 243 in the first half. Man, it didn't look good. It was moving the ball at will on that defense. And somehow at halftime, they come out and shut everything down. To only allow him 87 yards in the second half, to not allow S.J. Green any receptions in the second half. The defense was fantastic, their response. And the first drive for Matt Nichols to come out with the Bombers, I believe it was a 12-play drive, go down and put the ball into the end zone. That was one hell of a statement and response. I was wildly impressed with what the Bombers accomplished in the second half of that game. I think that's a sort of a statement game. That's the kind of game that helps to fuse a locker room. Super impressed. Massive win for the boys.
I was kind of meh on the win just because there were some good spots, there were some bad spots. But, you know, one of the things I think Bomber fans should be thankful for, and it's probably going to be for a short period of time, but enjoy what Paul Lapolis is doing with the offense. And look, they didn't light the scoreboard up or anything like that. It wasn't an explosive evening for them, but it didn't necessarily have to. And more importantly, the league's top pass rush unit with 14 sacks through three games didn't really get a whole lot on Matt Nichols. Never mind hits or hurries or anything like that. And a big part of it was how they schemed and game planned. And, you know, Derek Taylor from TSN highlighted on Twitter just a few minutes ago, a perfect example of that, where you're able to fake the run one way, move Nichols out of the pocket the other way, and there's no Argo within 10 yards of him. And that happened all night long. So while they didn't put up a ton of points, you know, more importantly, they weren't losing the field position battle too often. They were moving the ball fairly effectively as the night wore on. And I just thought it was a real, real solid effort by Paul Lapolis. And with how well he's coached here in Winnipeg the past two seasons, I don't know if he'll be around for a third. I don't know what coaching job's going to be out there, but there's no doubt he is the number one head coaching candidate in the CFL right now.
Bombers beat the Argos 33-25. What were your thoughts on the game? What were your impressions? Also last night, poorly officiated throughout the game, in my opinion, and especially on a kickoff return for the Argos that would have helped Winnipegger Karen Gouldis win $1 million on a blown call by an official. Your thoughts on the officiating, the blown call, and if the CFL should step up and do anything for Karen and the fact that she could have won $1 million and a blown CFL call or CFL official call kept her from doing so.
Yeah, I was really, truly sad after the game with this for her and for her husband and her daughter. Right? Her story, her daughter has a baby, still going to work. This would have helped. Karen could have kept her daughter at home and had cared for a baby. Like the story there was just, it was wonderful and beautiful. As it, $1 million would have changed any of our lives, no question about it, profoundly, right? But the thing is, it wasn't like the $1 million slipped through her fingers or anything like that. It was taken away from her. From a football standpoint, this call was horrible. Noel did not push Miller. Miller ran into Noel, puts his hand up to sort of help guide a body that's coming in away from him, and just a horrendously a big mistake on the field by the official. And I just felt horrible for Karen Kuldis. We spoke to her after that. She got up this morning at 4:30 a.m. to go to her job at A&W, and her life could have been changed forever in a remarkably positive manner, and it should have been. It was there. She, in a football sense, she won this contest. Right? It's just, it's tragic. It's
should
horrible.
Should the CFL do something for
her? I don't think it's funny, and I don't know how, like, I think it would be a nice gesture, a very kind gesture, and classy, and the CFL should probably make a gesture, give her an all-expense trip to the Grey Cup, something along those lines. But I would, I think that there would be a good PR move, but it doesn't take much of the sting away.
Should they do something for
him? Yes, they should. And I agree. I mean, for the CFL can't do anything financially for Karen, unfortunately, right?
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, it's with Safeway and that sort of thing. But I agree. I mean, a trip to the Grey Cup for her family should be the bare minimum that they offer her, you know, coming up in November. And I don't know if it's Safeway or some other company, but someone's going to help her out, hopefully, and more importantly, her daughter right now, who has a child, and you know, Karen kind of outlined their situation where, you know, like a lot of mothers, right, with young kids, where she has to work, but balancing that with taking care of her.
If the winner was a millionaire, would you feel the same? Well, like, the story adds to it, I understand, but to me, the problem is it was a blown call, and whoever was the winner should have got the cash.
Yeah, agreed.
Now, to me, the plight in life, and it's it adds to it, I understand that, but to me, it's like, should the CFL do something regardless of who the winner would have been?
Yes. I think from a PR standpoint, you're doing yourself a favor to give something out because of this.
Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Anything and everything coming up, and your thoughts on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and you on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, or text us at 1290-90. Standard message rates applying. Your thoughts on the Bombers, 33-25 win over the Argos last night and improving themselves to 2-1. Your thoughts on the officiating. Your thoughts on if something should be done for Karen or anyone who loses $1 million on a blown CFL call, like we saw in last night's game. Also, Mayweather-McGregor, is that enough for you? The gong show continues today in England. And the Jets signed two players, Mason Appleton, Andrew Kopp. Only Connor Hellebuyck remains unsigned. And anything else you wish to discuss with us here on The Big Show, TSN 1290? John, you're on the program to start us off today.
Hey, good morning, guys. Love the show.
Thank you.
I guess, in regards to the Bomber game there, are we saying that the league is going to claim ownership for that screw-up? I mean, I don't think I've ever seen the NHL tell us that the referees messed up, or I just can't see the CFL doing the same thing.
Well, if I'm correct, and Troy, you might know more, I thought an official was actually, like, not let go, but suspended for a game or something over some blown calls a year or two ago.
I'm not sure, but
I don't know if he lost his job.
But I assure you that they're reprimanded and they have meetings and evaluate them, I believe, on a weekly type basis.
And the CFL did come out and admit they blew that call. You mentioned the Darvin Adams offside,
yes,
phantom call a few years ago, one or two years ago, right? They came out after a couple days after the game, at least, and said, you know, the referee made the mistake there and the Bombers kind of got screwed over.
So they have done it before, like admitted when mistakes have been made, more so than like other leagues. That baseball does it too, but the NHL, you can't talk to officials. They rarely address the issue.
Yeah, I don't see. I mean, it'd be nice token appreciation thing if you know, they sent something her way. But I mean, that's, to me, it doesn't sound right that they acknowledge it like that in that regard. So I mean, it's too bad. But, and I'm sure too that there's something in there where the CFL has insurance against something like that that happens, or maybe even Safeway. Because I think that's how those things work.
Yeah,
I don't think so.
No, they don't.
For mistakes like that? No,
not for
so.
Mistakes, no. To pay this out, how this works,
okay,
from what I understand, is they'll like come up with the contest. They'll go to an insurance company and go, this is what they do. The insurance company looks at the odds of, like, in this case, two kickoff returns going in. They'll come up with a number to pay by the insurance. And I'm told, like, when it's $1 million, it's about 15 or 20K. So I would imagine the CFL and Safeway go in, pay the insurance, and then if it's won, the insurance company pays out $1 million. There's nothing in place for something like this. And quite honestly, as much as I feel for Karen and her family, I don't think she should get $1 million because the kickoff return didn't count. But it didn't count because of a blown call. So what I'm wondering is if the CFL, you know, should do something, give her some tickets or I don't know what, but what do you think if they should do something? But I don't think she should give the $1 million because on the score sheet, it didn't count as a kickoff return.
Right, they can't give her the $1 million.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe she'll get to go to the next Bomber game or something.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what we're wondering, is if she should get something, is if the CFL, marketing-wise, should do something for her. I sent her to, like, and I don't think the Bombers should. I think it's a CFL thing. If it's a set of Bomber season tickets, then the CFL should pay for those. I don't know what, but that's what we're asking on the Boss Pizza fan line. Thanks for the call, John, and feel free to weigh in. We'll get to more of your calls now on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Jeff, go ahead.
Hi there, guys.
Hey, Jeff.
So I've got a couple of quick comments, and then I'll make my main point. Love the Jets. And love the Bombers. I think they're both going in the right direction, so I'm thrilled about that. So my main comment is about the officiating in the CFL, including the officiating last night. Over the years, going to games and watching on television, it's been very frustrating. I mean, obviously, it's a sliding scale. It's a continuum in every sport in terms of how the officials are doing. But when it takes away from the game experience, it should be addressed by the league. And I think that there's a lot of kind of half-pregnant measures that the CFL has taken. Like, in what logical world can you review pass interference, but you can't review a blocking penalty on a play that results in a touchdown? Like, to me, that's an obvious one. And if you feel that it's helping to get the calls right, like you guys were saying earlier, why would you not go all in and review every kind of penalty? And I'm a Bomber fan, but I can't imagine how upset Argonaut fans must be today. That's my comment.
Yeah, I mean, that's the overall thing. This is a big story with Karen, but to the overall bigger picture, to me, I agree with you. Like, if you're an Argo, or, you know, even if the Bombers lose that game, I think they would feel the same. There was a lot of blown calls, and the pass interference call that I had a problem with against the Argos was corrected on a review. The play that I'm still upset about is that vicious hit to the head of Ricky Ray at the end of the game that just went uncalled.
And there was one, not the four on Shimmer, was it Jeffcoat that delivered that? But there was one on the second last drive on, I think it was the third down play, where he also got contact to the head, but there was no call on it. Yeah, and I don't know if you can review every single penalty that occurs, but certainly with the technology involved, I don't understand why Command Center can't be in the ear of the head ref talking things through as plays are developing and all the rest of it, because I think that would help with time and sort of the flow of the game as well. There's no question whatsoever, though. This is a number of years here, and when you're talking that people have been complaining and there's been a real serious problem with some of the officiating involved, the league has to address this. It's a matter of integrity for a league, and when you're trying to catch a foothold in a number of sensitive markets, I think it adds that much more emphasis on making sure that your officiating is as sound as possible.
And that's the step they have to take now, because it's gotten to this point. They need to have, wherever Command Center is, whatever they want to do, they need to have an off-the-field official help these guys out. And it would only be on the egregious ones, too, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we're not talking, like, I get I get John's point of doing it every flag and that sort of thing, but then it does become too much. But to get rid of the, you know, similar to the offside in hockey, like to get rid of the ones that are no doubt about it, no brainer blown calls, get rid of those and the 50-50 ones, you know, leave that to the referee's discretion. But to not have somebody call in and say, look, you guys, that take the flag, pick it up. It was a touchdown. It would take, what, an extra 10, 15 seconds probably?
And most of them you wouldn't even know because it would just be conversation with the head ref and command center, and take away those fishing expeditions you see from the coaches when they're just big play happens and they're just looking for something on the field that's egregious. There's a lot of work that could be done, and it seems like there's some fairly simple solutions.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Would you guys be fine watching a game where, say, last night, the interception by Heath, and you look and you think, down game, there's a game, there's no flags on the field, and would you like to become the norm of the anticipation of waiting to see if there's a call coming in? Like, that's the thing that I think the pace of the game is. So the play happens,
need to be
there's
like
no
that.
Flags, you're happy.
But it doesn't need to be a call.
If a call comes in and says he got hit in the head, then the game's you have 15 to 20 seconds for that call to come in, and then the game is paused when they're probably lining up already to go, no, wait a minute, there was a penalty on that play. Like, that's how that would work. Would you guys as fans be comfortable just that anticipation of going, well, the play's dead, there's no flags, but we have to wait?
Well, when you're saying the call coming in, to me, like, it's not like there's a call coming in. I think there's constant communication with an earpiece and with the whole thing. Like, it's not like he's got to run to the sideline to communicate. I think you can have the technology that there's constant conversation with command center in Toronto or wherever you want to have it situated, where and you're talking to sort of eyes in the sky constantly in your ear like that, and it's not going to be a matter of 20 seconds or something like that. They're watching. They would have access to all the angles or the film and stuff like that, and they could tell a ref right away before the play's done, right? Watching things in the pocket, watching things other places. I think you could do it in a very effective manner.
Yeah, I don't know how long it would take. That would be a good question. Thanks for the call, Jeff. We appreciate it. Derek, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call. As far as the officiating in the CFL, it is what it is. I think the bigger crime is the command center in Toronto or wherever the command center is, when they have an opportunity to actually look at a play and then make the wrong call. And it's happened several times this year already. I officiate football, and it happens so quick. I think we're using the review incorrectly in the CFL. They blew the call on that kick, I agree. I'm a Bomber fan, but I agree they got a break there. But Toronto also got a break on the Denmark call. That was definitely interference. He impeded Denmark's progress to the corner of the end zone to get the ball and grab them. And I just feel that the command center wanted to keep that game a one-score game because of some other calls before that just didn't go Toronto's way.
So you're an official, and you legitimately think that the command center wanted to keep it a one-score game?
Yes, absolutely. That was interference on Denmark in the end zone. He grabbed his hip. He turned him slightly. Automatic interference right there. It's actually, you know, illegal contact on a receiver, but because the ball went to Denmark, it now turns into pass interference.
Yeah,
and they wanted to keep it a one-score game. Like, we've seen five or six games already this year where the command center, after watching the replay, got the call wrong.
I didn't think he grabbed his hip.
I
thought his hand, like, was sort of on the outside of his hip, but more of a measuring as to where the body position was on him, not so much a grab. I thought they made the right call there.
So as an official, though, this is interesting. Like, what is your opinion, the best way of...
I don't think he's there.
Are you still there? Derek?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Derek, as an official, what is your best way to improve the overall officiating, you know, not only at this level, but all levels for football?
Well, the hardest thing being an official in football is the game happens so quickly, and you're actually supposed to look at a zone and not follow the ball. And when I'm watching a football game on TV, I see that a lot of the Canadian Football League officials follow the ball and don't follow the play. Like on that punt return after the touchdown called back, and then the same fellow had a punt return. There was two blocks in the back right at the point of contact. And he broke that one for, what, about another 40 or 50 yards. So, I mean, that one should have came all the way back. So it's just watching the right spots.
So but how do you fix that, though? Like, how do you train better, or what would you like to see done?
No idea.
No idea. Okay. Well, we appreciate the insight as an official, especially. Thanks, Derek, and we appreciate your time officiating as well. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. We'll take a break and come back. Jim, Barry, and Craig, lots of interesting discussion. Looking forward to it on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The deadline enter our Manitobaville contest is today at noon. So by all means, put a video together, get it into us at tsn1290.ca by noon today, and you have a chance to win $25,000. 10 finalists will be unveiled, and then the voting will begin. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 with Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Jim, you're on the program. Go ahead.
This is Jim from Neepwa calling, season ticket holder. Just wanted to talk about the million-dollar call. Hey, Troy, one of the nice things about you is that you wear your heart on your sleeve and you're an emotional guy, but and I know you think that this call was totally blown. But if you take this call in any other game and the Bombers are up by 28 points, you will find quite a few people who will go, you know, we could have made that call.
I don't agree with that. And way before the moment that we found out when we were doing the game here with Chris Walby and Darren Bombing, we thought that was a ridiculous call immediately before. I wasn't even aware. You know, I was out to lunch a little bit with the implications of the possible prize. You watch it on replay, and Mike Miller runs into the lane of Noel. So I just, to me, if the only way an official would call that is if he saw the body of Miller kind of go flying and assumed that Noel pushed him. To me,
another thing, if the CFL admits that they make a mistake, do we give the Argonauts the Argos the touchdown?
Well, they can't do that, right? That won't happen. That's just not the way things work when things like that occur.
And the conspiracy theory one guy was talking about,
I think that's
center, like, come on,
sheer rubbish. Yeah.
Hey, I've got 4 season tickets, good seats. I would give 2 of them to her for the next game, July 27th. If someone wants to get the info from me,
that's mighty kind of you, man. I think it's awesome that you make the trek in from Neepwa as well.
Here's another thing I want to talk about. I'm farming Neepwa waste, so with all the damn TV timeouts, we get home at about 1:30 in the morning. I know they pay the bills, but it just takes so much away from the game. If something could be tweaked there, like, I know that's the way the bills are paid, but, man, it's almost like you're at a baseball game where you're sort of watching the game, but you're not anymore, because for 3 minutes out of 5, there's TV timeouts, it seems.
Yeah, I don't think that's ever going to change, sir.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but Jim, we appreciate the sentiment. And if you want to send, you can send me an email at jim.toth@bellmedia.ca, and we'll see what we can do for Karen. That's an awfully nice gesture.
Jim Bell at, okay, sounds
Jim.
Good.
Jim.toth, T-O-T-H, at bellmedia.ca.
Thank you.
And I'll see what we can do. Thanks, Jim. We appreciate the call.
Bye.
Neepwa.
Neepwa, yeah. Season ticket holder. Shane, that's 90. Awesome.
Yeah, awesome to make the trek in for Bomber games too, man. That's awesome,
yeah.
Stuff.
Shane who? I'm kidding.
The sheriff, man.
I know the sheriff. I'm kidding.
He heard that too, probably.
Well, I'm just trying to get a free gift card for the Brazen Hall. What? What? Back to the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Barry, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, boys. Good morning. How you doing?
Very well, sir.
Good. I got a couple of points I'd like to make. First off, I want to agree with Troy with regards to the referees having something in their ear to command center, because it showed yesterday after the Denmark incident, the Bombers were going off the field after that change of possession, after the call was reversed, thinking it's third down, which it was. But then again, they said it was second down, so the Bombers were rushing back on the field knowing that it was third down, but they're going to play it because it's second down. And they almost snapped the ball before they got the buzz in his ear that it was third down. You remember that play?
Yeah, that was a gong show, huh?
Yeah, I mean, terrible officiating. Now, I'm going to talk about Karen. Now, I don't know if anybody's read the small print, but the small print specifies $50,000 incremented over a 20-year period, which would make the $1 million. And you must answer a skill testing question.
Okay? Yep.
Now, with regards to should the CFL give Karen anything? I don't know. I'm going to tell you my story. 2 years ago, I had a ticket, a 16 parlay for $8,800. a bad call in the game, which was the officials admitted was a wrong call. The next day, it cost me $8,800. Sports Select didn't scratch my back, so I don't know if she should get her back scratched or not.
It's a fair point story. To make. Yeah, fair point yeah. to make.
Sorry, but okay, guys, have a great weekend, guys.
Yeah, take care, man.
Good point, Barry. I've felt the wrath of that myself, and that I win a lot less than you, I guarantee you.
And I don't know if Sports Select can, you know, start to reach out to its clients or customers in the same manner the CFL specifically can here. Just a very small gesture can come off really well for the CFL in a public relations type way.
Yeah, I agree.
You would have to be, I think, real dumb from a company or organizational standpoint to not reach out and extend something towards towards the individual here, towards Karen Kuldis, in just an act of kindness, because that's going to shine well on you as a league.
Thanks for the call, Barry. Craig, you're on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. The game, I was surprised at how well our defense played. I thought LaPolice called a pretty good game, but I don't know what was going through their heads there with about a minute and a half left, and he's throwing this 40-yard bomb when he could have just ran the ball anything would have been better than that to just keep the clock running.
It was that was an outside the box type of a play, right? Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. The other thing on officiating, to me, it's almost like when you're at a workplace and you got a supervisor that's right in the back, your back pocket, watching everything that you do, you're not going to be nearly as productive because you always know you have a backup there. I'm almost thinking that they should reduce the command center control and leave it more up to the officials. I agree with having the calls made right, but they can, I don't know, I think it takes away from their sharpness on the field when they know that they can always be bailed out. And the other part of it is the enjoyability of watching a game right now. It's like after every play, you're bracing for a challenge or a review of some kind. Even on the first run back, I'm thinking there's going to be a flag, there's going to be a challenge, there's going to be something like that. And so you have to wait this 10 seconds, 30 seconds to see if you can actually enjoy it.
Yeah, that's what I bring up too. I think even if they're in their ear, like, you have to keep in mind at the pace of the game, the official is watching this play end. And if somebody starts speaking in his ear, like say Ricky Ray's hit in the head and before the ball's, you know, it's intercepted, and then somebody starts speaking in his ear and they're trying to see where TJ Heat's going and all that stuff, I think there is going to be a further delay. And I wonder if fans would want, there's already so many delays, they're not going to want to watch the play end, look for flags, and then wait to see if there's a call coming. I don't think it can be done simultaneously. I think it has to happen after the play's done, and then they have to go back. And it's interesting discussion on if they can fix that and make it better and if that's the way to do it. Craig, we got to go. Al, Todd, and Carrier, hang on the line. We'll get to you as soon as we get back on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
This Friday, today, is team registration deadline for MTS Super Spike. Go to superspike.ca by midnight tonight to register your team in all of the divisions available, and we'll have some passes for that later in the show. And also keep in mind the TSN 1290 Golf for Kids Classic on Tuesday, August 15th. We still have some spots to fill, but they are filling up fast. TSN1290.ca.
I'm going to give some love to all the folks out at Budget Rent-A-Car. They're hooking me up with a beautiful Trailhawk Jeep Cherokee this weekend. We're going out on a family adventure. Budget Rent-A-Car, thank you.
Wow. Where are you going? Don't tell
me. You know what? Sometimes we just go, man.
Really?
Yeah. Jump on 44, see where it takes you. Maybe jump on 6, see where it takes you. I love that. Love heading out to the rural parts of Manitoba.
I often say that to Hustler when he picks me up. I'm like, what are we doing?
You guys are different there, right? You stay of downtown and you're more nightclub
city boys.
Based. Yes.
Let's just to Mexico. He always says, Toth.
Speaking of the rural area.
I'm not coming this far south to get you anymore.
I should mention, too, anyone in rural kind of Winnipeg or Manitoba, there's a great deal with the St. Adolph Motor Inn. You can get a ticket to the Bomber game, crazy good seats, and a bus ride.
St. Adolph Motor Inn.
St. Adolph Motor Inn.
Cool.
Best wings in the province. Not even a competition, but you can get a Bomber ticket.
What are you doing out in St. Adolph?
Don't worry about what I do in St. Adolph.
What are you doing at the hotel?
Once again, don't worry what I do. And I don't use my actual name out there either.
Give me
either,
the Parisian theme suite, please.
But tickets
you
to the game.
You don't look like I thought you would, Mr. Westwood. That's okay.
That ain't right, man.
Tickets to the game, a bus ride to the stadium and a bus ride back, as well as a beverage for $40.
Wow. So it's the front door.
It is a deal straight from the heavens.
Wow.
So anybody in that area or even in Winnipeg, really, if you want to just head down there and get some wings, it's a fun time, fun place. So I'd definitely try that out.
You guys are all hooked up. All I have is if you see me at a game,
you
I
got
do
Hucks.
Accept beer.
That's all you need? Yeah, right? You'd walk into wherever you want to go, you got Hucks with you.
That only happens every once in a while. Every fifth game he gives me a call. Do you want to go to the game? Other than that, he's very busy. Back to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Interesting topics today. Lots to get to. Al, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning.
Love the show, guys.
Thanks,
Thank
Al.
You, sir.
I got a few points. I won't take too much time. Command Center, it's an embarrassment. And I don't know what Command Center is, but in my mind, I envision a hotel room with, like, a bunch of retired officials and an open bar. And I think they have to do away with the open bar or something. They've blown so many calls. It's embarrassing for us. Like that game against Saskatchewan last week. I mean, oh, my gosh. But just a point of levity there. The Command Center's not doing our league a whole lot of favors. But regarding the missed field goal and the lady that lost out on $1 million, what about setting up a GoFundMe page? Like, why don't you guys take the ball and run with it? You know, put up a GoFundMe page, let the well-intentioned fans of the CFL each pitch in a little bit, and this woman can probably come home with a few bucks to compensate her for her loss.
Yeah.
I saw that idea floated last night, too.
Yeah. You know what?
It's a good idea.
I'll bet you there'd be people that would be all over that idea just because she got a job there, and it's unfortunate. And Troy, last night on the post game, you guys gave the offensive player to Harris, and I get it. I mean, the guy's just a bull, and he's all out there. I love it. But I think what's getting overlooked is Medlock.
Fair.
That field goal from center field,
that was
a turning point. And it's almost as though we take him for granted as part of our offense. It seems like the offense plans change once we get to about the 50-yard line because the backup plan is we're going to boot for three. And he is just such a good acquisition. When we let Haurelahu go, I was disappointed about that. I thought it was a mistake, but he's long forgotten with Medlock kicking the ball.
That's a very, very fair point to make, man. He is unbelievable how accurate and solid he is.
And he was kind of overpaid in free agency relatively to other kickers in the league. You know what I mean? But that deal is worth its weight in gold. Mm-hmm. Like, he is worth – kickers shouldn't necessarily be getting six figures. But, I mean, there's no – he's one of the best –
that's not true. Yeah, they should. If you should, man, because as far as the point, what you give for points, if you're operating something north of 85%, 90%, and he was prior to coming here, he's the most accurate kicker in league history, and the Bombers had lost so many games that season because of the kicking, after never having lost games previously in the organization because of kicking, that they had to you pay what you get for, right? I mean, is there a better example of you pay what you get for than what this whole situation here with Medlock? And a fantastic point to make about Medlock, and you get a situation here where the Bombers, you know, go up in the game here, but if you miss that field goal, Toronto struts out in the field with the ball in fantastic position. But it is amazing. When he walks out of the field, who has a shred of concern or worry? It's like it's almost you just completely take it for granted at this point in time, extra point or field goal, that sucker's going through.
55-yarder with plenty to spare could have hit 61 in my mind. And I'm not being funny. I'm serious. I still think that's the right call. I could have made it. Al, thanks for the call. Todd, you're on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Go ahead.
Yeah, hey, guys. Good morning. How you doing?
Good.
I just as a former RAF fan as well as a coach, the problem that we've got is when you take the game, you take the flow of the game away from the refs is what you do. And guys are not as excited about signing up and reffing with the way that the reffing is going. I think, you know, if you ask most refs, I think besides, you know, whether the home run was over the fence, the puck crossed the line, or the ball broke the plane, other than that, there's absolutely no need for it. You know, there's cases where I know I've missed a call. I've had one of my linesmen come to me say, this guy is just hacking and slashing a guy. So the second he makes the smallest little effect to hack a guy, I call him. I got parents, coaches losing their mind that I would call something, a penalty, over a small little infraction that wasn't much of a slash, for example. But I'm just catching up for what this guy's been doing all game. I mean, this is, we have to have control, you know, to have the flow of the game.
Yeah, I understand you need control. The only question I have, Todd, along those lines, and this is what I don't like about the NHL, why didn't you call the first one?
Well, I didn't see it.
Okay.
I mean, there's just sometimes.
Well, then how do you know you're catching up to it?
Because my linesman came and said, you missed the slash, number
14. Oh, okay.
Do it all game. And then all of a sudden, now I'm aware of it, now I watch him.
Right.
But I'm trying to make sure, you know, I'm catching the obvious stuff, right?
Yeah.
You know, I got position and everything like that. This is where the system has to work.
I do buy into the theory with all these reviews that it's not a favorable job. Nobody likes to make a call and then have it reversed in front of 30,000 people and whoever's watching. I get that aspect of wanting to sign up for it.
The only the thing is, and hey, sports is in a period of evolution here as technology meets officiating, and how those two are merging to ultimately deliver the way that the games are officiated, whatever sport we're talking about. And it's not a static thing, but there's no going back. Sometimes people say ignorance is bliss, and certainly in the sports world it was 30 years ago. Without all these angles and replays and everything else, well, you had to accept, right? Maybe you were upset. You thought that ref blew that call, but nobody would watch an instant replay. You didn't have them available, and you just had to absorb and accept it and move on. I miss those days. I wish that refs could still operate in that manner. I have no problem at all accepting the human element of refs, understanding refs are doing their very best in an impartial manner to call the game to the very best of their ability. And in the long run, the calls that go against you will make out with the calls that went in your favor. I wish we could somehow step into a time machine and go back to those days.
And I'll say probably the area I agree the most in that sort of regard, and I give the CFL full credit for trying it out when no other league would. But it doesn't work at all, and it's the pass interference review.
Yeah.
It's just terrible. I can't stand it.
Yet the NFL's considering it.
Yeah.
Looking at the example in the CFL.
Which is interesting and a bit foolish, I think. The thing I hate the most probably is the ones at the end of the game.
Yeah, and
right?
Those are the fishing ones.
Exactly.
And that's what the CFL could very easily remedy that. So that needs to be dealt with. It is difficult. All the leagues, essentially, I think, are struggling in the same manner and coming to an understanding of how best to utilize the technology available that you have to utilize these days, because your fan bases involved are finding out what actually happened. Like, it's a tough spot for leagues and officials to sort of grab onto what's the best way to deliver the game in that manner.
Thanks for the call, Todd. Great points. We appreciate the insight. 780-1290, the Boss Pizza fan line. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Go ahead, Kerry.
Hey, Ruwicki, you getting paid per passenger from that St. Adolphe Hotel?
I was going to say, the way we're dropping stuff here today, this whole show.
I get paid per wing, every wing.
Hey, listen, you know what? She lost $1 million. Okay, that's great. The fact is, though, she won $25,000 worth of electronics and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, okay, let's take away the $1 million thing on that call. Let's go over what happened. First off, the referee is caught flat-footed on 55-yard line. And when he sees the ball coming, he's still standing there when he sees the runner coming. Okay, Noel from Toronto, why are you running as hard as you can when you're 10 yards behind the guy trying to catch up to him?
Well, everybody's doing that, though, pretty much, right?
And, Troy, you know what? For years I have said how many times I have seen this play happen
and maybe a handful of times I've seen that play called. Because a defensive player, and you got to give kudos to Miller on this play.
Yeah.
If
he sells the call.
You are a coach and you're a special teams coach, and after the game, you're reviewing all week, you're going, look at the hustle by Miller, and he put himself in position for that call to be made.
True, yeah.
I am giving that guy the special teams ball.
Yep.
That took 4 points off the board. That's a huge play.
Agreed, yeah.
So, as a fan, I love the fact that Miller did it. As an overall fan of the million-dollar giveaway, I feel sorry that she didn't get it. But in the overall scheme of things, the play happens how it happens. You can't take the video replay and call that back. It's something that happened. It was an injustice. Everything's going to go on. She got $25,000 that she won worth of electronics and stuff. I don't agree with people reaching out to call her last night from TSN and making this a bigger story than it should have been. I feel sorry for her. And I feel even worse that she's been brought into the spotlight of this.
Yeah, I was real hesitant when it was the notion was introduced to talk to her. I was like, hell no, we shouldn't talk to her. But it was made aware to me that she was making herself available to speak,
it's
almost like she wanted to speak out about it. So that sort of changed my mind on talking to her, is that it seemed like she wanted to speak to people.
It's one of those uncomfortable things that you kind of have to do, right?
She needed to sort of express herself.
If nobody talked to her, everybody today would be wondering how she felt about it. Like, that's why you contacted her. It might not be the, you know, so, and I understand what you're saying, Kerry, but I'll tell you this, if that guy got tackled on a shoestring tackle and was down at the one, I don't feel bad for Karen. The reason I feel bad for Karen is because she legitimately won this and it was taken away on a blown call.
Well, I'd feel bad for her, but I wouldn't feel she got robbed.
Yeah, well, yeah. Maybe the 2-yard line. But great stuff, Kerry. We'll take a break and get back to Greg when we get back to the rest of the phone calls on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, when we come back to the Big Show.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
TSN 1290 in Robertson College present the return of the 10K Summer Selfie, 10 grand in prizes, and to enter, take a really good selfie at some point during the summer and post it before Thursday, August 31st to Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram using the hashtag 10K Summer Selfie. Selfie of the Summer presented by Robertson College could net you $5,000. Best Smile Selfie presented by Toddlers to Teens could get you $1,000, as other $1,000 prizes include Best Outdoor Selfie presented by Lacoste Garden Center, Best Hair Selfie presented by Aura Hair Group, Best Food and Drink Selfie presented by Booster Juice, Best Animal Selfie presented by Assiniboine Park Zoo. For more information, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon and the Boss Pizza Fan Line. Greg, you're on the program. Thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Morning, guys. Really unfortunate that we're talking about this instead of all the good things that happened for both teams last night. Could have been an entertaining game, but this totally derailed it. And I know that sometimes they overturn calls because it was an uncatchable ball. And can't predict that he was going to cross the goal line, but let's face it, he was as good as in the end zone when the call was made, and that's really what burns me. And, you know, as far as Karen's concerned, for me, what made me, like, I was mad, just like everybody else that's been commenting was mad that it turned out that it made her lose a lot of money, and sounds like that would have made a big difference in their life. The TSN guys, except for Jock, and I'm not just saying Milt, I mean all the commentators all night long after the game, they're trying to, and I know, Troy, you touched on this in the 7 o'clock hour, but, you know, that just inflamed it for me, that they weren't taking it seriously and kind of making a joke out of it. Mm-hmm. It just burned my butt.
Yeah, I agree with
that.
That's
all.
Yeah, I agree. People, and on Twitter, too, I thought it was people were, I don't know, they're just having sort of fun with it or thinking, you know, acting in a funny way with it, right? Like, and I thought it was just to be in the situation, in that living room with Karen Koldis and her husband watching that, and, like, the emotional high of watching that unfold only for it to come crashing down on a bad call, just it was real horrible. Now, the game itself I thought was still wildly entertaining, right? Was it 8 lead changes? And it was a lot of fun to watch the game, but a real unfortunate sort of side story to this here with Karen Koldis, and wishing her going forward, wishing her and her family the very best, most certainly. It seemed like real nice people and fans of the CFL, and they deserve better than what ended up transpiring last night.
Thanks for the call, Greg, on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Jordan, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Hey, guys, how's it going? It's a beautiful Friday out here. I'm
gorgeous.
Weekend to start. How are you guys doing?
Good, you?
Good, good, good. I just got a few things. A good signing by the Jets yesterday, I thought, with Andrew Kopp for two years, $1 million a year. I think that, you know, he could pick up his game a bit, and maybe if he gets a little bit more opportunity, we could see a little bit more out of him. That would be nice to see. And also, you know, you do feel bad for Karen, that's for sure. You got to feel bad for $1 million in anybody's pocket. Would be quite nice, quite nice, I would admit. One thing, though, is there was this GoFundMe page thing. There's many other things that we could do GoFundMe. I just feel bad that they got really messed up on a horrible call. Horrible call. It's basically like the guy ran into somebody's back, and they called blocking in the back. So that's tough, but on the same point, you know, it is a competition or it's a contest. She did get the short end of the stick, but she did get $25,000 worth of equipment, but you do got to feel bad for her for not getting the mill. But at the same point, you know, it's a contest, and sometimes people get the short end of the stick in contests.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know about the GoFund page either, but I don't know. I think there's bigger, more needed causes than that. But that's a personal thing. If people want to help her out, I encourage that. Go ahead, by all means. And as Jim, who called in earlier from Neepawa, if he wants to give her a pair of tickets to the game, I'll be more than happy to try and coordinate that. So, your guys' thoughts on that?
No, I think there's a general, you know, in the end, we're just kind of sad that she got basically jobbed or robbed, however you want to phrase it, out of the $1 million. It's something that doesn't happen very often. Chris Walby was telling me a story of how it happened in Edmonton a number of years back, and Gizmo Williams was the one that won the individual $1 million, and he was trying to appeal to the couple who won that he thought he should be getting some of the money. And I guess the people came to practice for a card for him, and he was excited to open it up. When he opened it up, all it said was, "Thanks a million." And he got upset that he didn't get any money out of it. And Walby told us that story during the second half of last night's game. But, hey, a huge win for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. I was so impressed with what they pulled off in the second half. That's the kind of win that really fuses what's already a close locker room there. You got to tip your hat to the coaches involved, the game plan by Paul Lapolice, the way the defense responded here, Richie Hall and Mike O'Shea in that second half was super impressive. All the guys up and down the field, what a fantastic victory in that second half.
Yeah, I think that's also the focus should still be on part of that as well, or most of it. The 33-25 win over the Argos, I thought the defense did a lot of things that I thought they would have trouble with. And as Troy pointed out throughout the broadcast, the second half for the offense, they controlled the ball, and it was a big win for the Bombers at home. They now go to BC a week from tonight, and then they return on Thursday, July 27th, to play the Montreal Alouettes. They have a 2-1 record. It'll be interesting as we'll delve into the game next week as well. Thanks for the call, Jordan. Thanks for all the calls and the interaction today. Great show from you, the listeners. We appreciate you taking the time. Rick Ralph of the Don Vito Roundtable at 11 a.m. today. A Hustler will have the Gondola Pizza warm-up at 2 and then have the afternoon ride to carry you till 6 when we have Blue Jays baseball on TSN 1290. As they make a push towards the second half after the All-Star break, they'll be in Detroit to take on the Tigers. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rurwicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we gave some Super Spike tickets away to somebody, too.
David Asplin,
congratulations. You're going to Super Spike. And by the way, that is the deadline today to register your team at midnightsuperspike.ca. Once again, on behalf of Troy, Brandon, and myself, Jim Toth, we appreciate you listening. Have a great weekend, everybody. And the Big Show will be back Monday morning at 6 a.m. on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.